Are there any other changes to this evening's agenda? No.
Okay, if not, is there a motion to approve the amended agenda?
Motion.
Second.
Have a motion by Commissioner Page, second by Commissioner Gibbs. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. At this time, I think that, I would like to recognize, one of our newly elected commissioners that's with us this evening, Michael Newman. You still back there?
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Bids and public hearings, number four. The board to hold a public hearing set for this day at 6 p.m. or as soon thereafter as possible on the passage of a proposed ordinance to amend county ordinance number 2005-3 to create an exception from connecting to the Taylor Coastal and Sewer District. Is there a motion to read the ordinance by title only?
Motion.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Murphy, second by Commissioner Gibbs. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Mr. Bishop?
An ordinance, Mayor of County of Florida, to amend ordinance 2005-3, County Code, Section 66-150 and 66-151, creating an exception from connecting to the Taylor Coastal Water and Sewer District to provide for an effective date to repeal all ordinance in conflict herewith.
Thank you. Mr. Bishop, do you want to give an update on
Sure. Yes, ma'am. If you'll recall, some prospective owners, through their attorney, came before the board suggesting that we amend this ordinance. And the Taylor Coastal Water and Sewer District had some problems with that. So what happened was, Taylor Coastal Water and Sewer District hired Mr. Joe Boyd from Tallahassee. He's a very respected lawyer from Tallahassee that I've known for a number of years. His father was a Supreme Court Justice of the state of Florida, who was in my dad's naval squadron, I think. Or they went to school together or something. Knew him for a long time.
Okay.
But anyway, just to give you a little background on Mr. Boyd, and he got with Mr. Curtis, and they agreed to, you know, we had two people, we're in the middle of it, you know, the board's in the middle of this problem, and they agreed to agree, and there are several changes with regard to 66-150 and 66-151. And essentially what it does is it gives the owner the right to connect, and the owner may employ, if they don't connect, they may employ a private maintained system with regard to the sewer and with regard to the to water. So, because as I told you before, the board so many times is caught in the middle of these disputes. So I think both sides are very satisfied with this proposed ordinance.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
At this time, I will open up, this is a public hearing, and I'll open up the public hearing at this time. If there's anyone who wishes to speak on this agenda item.
You have two callers. Caller 0008.
Okay, caller 0008, you may speak now for 3 minutes.
I have no comment on this topic.
Okay, thank you. Who's the other caller?
Caller 5759.
Caller 5759, you can speak at this time for 3 minutes.
Good evening, Madam Chair, Board of County Commissioners, this is Attorney Raker, and I won't belabor the point. Mr. Bishop and myself and Mr. Joe Boyd and myself have worked diligently to bring you what I think we all agree is a sound solution to the kind of impasse that has been reached, and it avoids any taking of liability by the county or of the Coastal Sewer Water District for any persons that need to apply for some kind of water services that the district is unable to provide. And so I think this was a good place to end up, and I appreciate both of these gentlemen for their hard work on it.
Thank you, Ray. Anyone else wish to speak to this agenda item? Any other calls? Are there any other calls?
No, ma'am.
Okay, thank you. Being no further calls, and no one is here from the public to speak, I will close this public hearing at this time, and I will open up the for the board to discuss. Any board member who wishes to speak?
Let me speak. I heard what Mr. Bishop and Mr. Curtis has said, that this is a good compromise.
Mm-hmm.
Was contacted by someone who was on that water board, and they said it was a good compromise, and they didn't have to get into it. So I'm looking in favor of this ordinance.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else wish to speak? Okay, if not, then is there a motion to approve this ordinance?
I make motion.
Okay, we
have to. Isn't that, this a roll call again?
Yeah.
Okay. It is.
You want to call roll?
Yeah.
Gary? Yeah. Sorry.
Better way, Mr. Booty, to get back.
Yeah. So we have motion from Commissioner Martin, second by
Commissioner Gibbs.
Commissioner Murphy, is this what? Commissioner Murphy?
Yes.
Yes.
Commissioner Dems?
Yes.
Commissioner Beagle?
Yes.
Commissioner Bates?
Yes.
Commissioner Moody, we're waiting on your vote for the to approve this ordinance.
Commissioner Moody, what's your vote on this ordinance?
I'm fine with it.
Okay, so it is approved with all five. Okay, we will move on to item number five. The board to receive bids for construction of the east and north of Ellison Road widening to public property set for this day at 6:05 p.m. or as soon thereafter as possible.
The clerk notified me earlier today that we received this one is one bid from Anderson and Dunlop. The bid committee for this will be myself, Hank Evans, and if we need a third, Scott Knight.
You said you had one bid?
I believe this.
Yeah.
That's
okay. And then we have a question?
Yes. Sir. Yes, sir. Which is a bit of a surprise because we received quite a bit of interest from two other companies as well.
City Florida was the only bid that we received, and their lump sum bid price was $1,398,000
$449.29.
Okay, thank you. And as Ken understood, that he and Hank and Scott will be the bid committee, and I'm assuming you'll bring it back for the next time. But first, let me ask you, how does this play into what we're finding that we have?
My current estimate on this was $1,304,000, so it's pretty close to what I had estimated at. When we talked some time back, when we were discussing funds and several projects like the Coachella, the Hatford, we anticipated at that time it was a $1.36 million estimate, allowing for 189 CPI work. That left us with a $900,000 deficit, of which we were intending to make up that deficit out of the common account out of the secondary. So as of today, there is still $1.1 million in the common account, exactly 115. And I have received a CEI proposal from CHW for this job. I'll bring it to the next board meeting to offer the task order. But their estimate or their proposal was for 201,630. So you looking at the funds that we received from DOT, we're at a $441,633,000 of available dollars right now. So we would need to take the difference between Anderson's bid, which is the 1398, that 441, and that's what I would be looking for to make up out of the secondary rotating, which should be a little more than $900,000.
That's coming from the common account.
That's correct.
Which you believe is about $300,000 in there?
That's correct. Roughly somewhere in that neighborhood, yes, sir. Which is what we expected.
Okay. A lot of the residents in that area have been asking me lately about this, and they want to know if we're going to be doing anything during this that's going to help alleviate some of the water issues on that road.
All of the design for the full length of the road addresses the drainage. It reestablishes the drainage to the original patterns that were there when the road was constructed originally. There are some additional agreements that you're aware of on the far east end of East Ellison that needs to happen in order to provide a passive open outlet for some of that stormwater to the south to make it to that creek. That's got to happen, or else you're going to continue to have issues in that area because there's nowhere for that water to go based on the development that's happened over time.
Well, if you don't have agreeable landowners, if that's what you're referring
yes,
to, then I don't know a solution. And I mean, they're looking for something, and you know, I tell them we'll do everything we can, but we can't do the impossible.
No, the reality is the area that we're trying to address that drainage will directly benefit those people that live in that area. So I mean, it is literally a problem that exists on these properties that is a downstream component of the project that they've had problems over and over that they have to address. We have offered a solution to pass it where they don't have to worry about the flooding. As a flood control measure to carry that water away from this area.
So, bottom line, I and you and the county have done everything possible to help this water situation on East Ellison Street. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am. We've got to the point that they have to allow us to go any further.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
What I would like to do, though, is given that we only have a single bid, what I would like to propose is that the bid committee review this bid, and I can return back with that confirmation once we execute a contract, but I would ask that you be able to approve this contingent on this bid meeting those specifications.
Okay, but I have one more question and then I'll call for a motion. So, you know, we've talked about alleviating some of the flooding and steam hatching. And of course, I've pointed out that I have these issues in my district. This is one of them, and I have another area that is problematic for flooding, and some of the other commissioners have the same problems. So if we, no matter if we were to get a lot more grant money or whatever, money is not the issue here, right?
Correct. The issue at this point is we have to receive landowner permissions in order to put in a solution that will address the problem that's in this area.
I know it's a bad word, but it's eminent domain. Did you discuss it?
You know, that's obviously we don't try to discuss it. So we try to use the peaceable solution. And we discussed it with the landowners, and we talked with them and told them the solution, both the two that it affects primarily. And, you know, they weren't negative towards it, but the proof is in the pudding when you bring an easement before them and say, I need you to sign this, that gives us right to install it and maintain it going forward, that unless we get that, we're not going to be able to. So my hope is that with this action of moving the road project forward, is that they would be more amenable to us constructing that drainage leg of this once they see that the road's actually going to happen.
What was the main issue for not wanting to do the ditch?
The best I could tell, sir, was that there would be a county maintained ditch on their property. That's all it really seemed like. Because, you know, we tried, I told them, I said, look, my purpose is not to drain this entire area. We would put the bottom of the ditch the same elevation as the culvert that's in front of it. We would make the slopes of it just as gentle as we can to make it easier to maintain if they want to mow this area. But I think there's just kind of an adversity to someone willingly saying, you know, I really want you to put a ditch across my property and the county's going to be out here, you know, maintaining whenever. Yeah. So that's all I think it is. I don't think it's the fact that we're trying to do it in that location. I think it's more just
I know I've tried to work with most of the landowners out there, pretty much all of them. And, you know, again, you can't, without doing, enacting eminent domain, you can't make them. And I just wanted to make it publicly clear that we've done everything that we could do. Nobody else could do any better, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
And you talked with the individual self-time?
Yes, sir. Yeah. I know the answer for it, but I've been there when she's had the discussion, so I know that she has.
Let me ask a question, Ken.
Yes, sir.
And suppose you don't get an easement, the ditch. Is the construction work on Ellison Road going to make it worse on the people on the east end of that road?
We are not adding any new cross drains or culverts under this roadway to alter the drainage pattern. What you have over time is people tend to put in driveways that obstruct the way the flow originally was intended to move. When we go through and do these new projects, we actually restore that drainage. So you're going to see additional water that will move to the west, because of blockages that are there now that will be restored to the way they were originally. So yes, sir, there is going to be some additional flow that, especially on that east end, that will be moving away from the actual paved end of the road,
yeah,
back towards that cross drain, which is why we were picking up at that location. And it's the border between, it's the east side of Mr. Pruitt's property, that we had proposed to run a ditch to the south across that power line easement, and then going even further south across to the next adjacent parcel. And then that spills out based on elevations, because the ditch isn't necessary at that point. And then it moves down to Spring Creek. So there's a little bit of a hill right there where the power line is.
Mm-hmm.
There's a basin right there where Mr. Pruitt's got grapevines and things that are there. It's kind of an open area across this front property that's from the culvert opening. So we need to clean from basically right around where the grapevines start to come up, across the power line easement, and then turn, turn to the south, and then venture more a little to the southwest to where the field kind of falls off, and then it'll move as a sheet flow across that silviculture property.
So Kim, when is the last time you spoke with the two parties?
Hank and I, I think it was sometime last year, that Hank and I went out, we physically met with him and kind of walked the property and showed him what we were wanting to do. And I told him at that time, I told him that we would be preparing a legal easement to address the drainage. And I reached out a couple times and left messages to try to get back up with him. You know, it's probably my fault for not being diligent and doing it once a month since then, but I knew I had this in the back of my mind that once this project moved forward, I think they would be more receptive, understanding that the project was a reality then, is what I'm hoping.
Okay, but what I'd like to do is try to set something up between me and you and Mr. Pruitt.
Yes, ma'am.
And approach him one more time and see with this moving forward now, like you say, it's about to become a reality.
Yes, ma'am.
And just, you know, try one more time, and we can say, you know, we went the extra mile or more, just to make sure.
Well,
he
hasn't.
We haven't changed his mind, or that we can't, you know, talk any.
Well, just for the record, Mr. Pruitt never told me no. He wanted to see the easement, and he wanted to see everything that it was going to address before he was able to make his final decision. So I'm not going out there, I don't think, trying to change his mind.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going out there to finish the discussion to say this is what we would like to do on a permanent basis to address the road issue as well as your driving problem.
Okay, well, maybe you and I and our county administrator and maybe Hank,
yes,
if that seems appropriate to you, and we'll just talk to him again and see how it turns out.
Okay, are you going to... Do you want us to facilitate that meeting, or are you going to reach out?
I'll get your little number tomorrow, and we'll come up with something.
Yes, ma'am.
What about Thomas?
Yeah, that's what I'm going
to do. And I just didn't call my name. I've met with Al Ray and Cal both, and showed them what we were wanting to do. And I think they're, you know, wanting to ensure that the upstream individual, Mr. Pruitt, is willing to agree to this before, in other words, if he doesn't, it's irrelevant to them. But, you know, we would have the same thing, a little bit of an easement on their property. I've drafted it, and I've got the legal description created, Conrad will go for it for Mr. Pruitt's property. We would use the same format, but just a different legal description when we get on theirs. But just, you know, one leg at a time, I'd like to, let's see if we can get Mr. Pruitt on board and get that issue kind of resolved, and then I hope that will be a facilitator to encourage Mr. Yeah. Howard and Mr. Cow to agree to this.
Well, I'll get Will to alarm the first thing in the morning, and we'll try to set something up, you know, in a convenient time with him and the rest of us, and see what we can do. So, if there are no other questions, then Kim has asked them to approve a tentative on the bid committee doing their job.
I want to approve it contingent on the bid meeting, the bid specification.
And
I will tell you this, the only reason I'm trying to encourage this and accelerate it is because it's an older job and we need to show activity with respect to DOT and the funding reimbursements so that we don't mind the business
coming. Right. And this has been a long time coming, and that's just, you know, when we're talking about constituents and talking to other people, they don't understand sometimes how long this takes, and things that can change along the way. And so I'm really glad that it's about to come to fruition. I really appreciate the work you've done on this. So if there's no other questions or anything, then I'll entertain a motion to approve this contingent on the bid specifications and the bid specifications.
I got one question. If you couldn't get the easement to put the ditch in, are you still going to pave the road?
Am I still going to let the road?
If you could not get the ditch to let the water run out of there, are we still planning on doing the paving job and digging the ditch?
Yes, sir. This job, and that's what it is this, you know, historically drainage goes to the low areas along the roadway. Mm-hmm. It's still going to go to the low area along the roadway, but people have moved in and developed this. Realizing that there's going to be an issue there, we have tried to, for quite some time, ensure that that will no longer be an issue going forward, because we know that we have, the county has personally gone out there and performed a work effort to alleviate the flooding in this area by helping dig a ditch through the same exact area that we're wanting to do this. So we're looking at it as a permanent solution. Sir?
Needs to cover up the ditch.
I believe it did, yes, sir.
Pardon?
I'm pretty certain it did, yes, sir.
Y'all clean the ditch out. I mean,
yeah.
The ditch that y'all dug, y'all went back and leveled it all up.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Paint did, I know.
Yes.
Can I ask a question? I'm sorry. Are you asking for additional funding from the common account at this time, or has that funding already been secured?
The funding has not been encumbered. So that's why I said the available balance that's showing on there does not have this project's encumbrance in it.
And that's, what was the total on that?
I know it's over 900. I didn't count the math real quick.
Okay.
We wouldn't encumber it until I hit a contract, and then I'll issue a PO, and then once the PO is there, that's when it will
encumber. Right. I just want to make sure I understood the numbers.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Okay. Is there a motion?
I'll make the motion.
Okay, and is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, we got a motion by Commissioner Page and a second by Commissioner Murphy. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Item number six. The board to receive bids for construction of Kingston County Road and Ellison Creek Road project set for this day at 6:10 p.m. or as soon thereafter as possible.
We received two bids on this one. One is from Anderson Columbia, and then the second one is from Kurtz Construction.
The first one we have here is Anderson Columbia.
Just to do two things at once, I will keep the same bid committed to.
So the total lump sum price is $618,574.21.
That's for both roads?
Yes. Yes. So Kurtz Construction for Hinkson County Road, it's $271,638.75.
Mm-hmm.
And for Ellison Fripp, it's $311,778.20. Anderson Columbia for Hinkson County Road, is $278,358.39. And for Ellison Thrift Road is $340,215.82.
The last one was $340,000, what?
$215.82.
Have you had any dealings with Kirk Construction? I'm doing a good job.
Haven't had any work with them in quite some time, but yesterday, when they did the work, it was acceptable. From a budgeting standpoint, you're not going to be able to afford both these roads.
Right. I figured that.
Yeah, and of the two, Hinkson Tanner is much closer to, the bids for Hinkson Tanner is much closer to the estimates versus the Ellison Thrift.
Well, I hate to be in a position to have to choose because, you know, my constituents on both roads have waited a long time for this and, you know, they both need it and deserve it, but seeing how we do not have the funding, then and since it's my district, I think I would have to go with the lowest bid, which would be Hinkson Tanner Road. That would be my choice.
Yeah, you got $264,000 after reserving your CDI costs. You got $264,825 left. So against Hinkson Tanner only, you're only talking, you know, for the low bid there, and we're just going to find out. No, that's actually okay anyway. You're within, what, $7,000 of that.
And again, I hate it for my constituents on the other road. Nothing more than I'd like them to pay for both of them at the same time. That's what I really wanted and still want. But since we don't have the money, then I have to go with that lowest bid and right there at Hinkson Tanner.
Well, we got $200,000 in the common account, right?
Yes, sir.
Now, if we factor that into what you need, you do both roads.
If you just look at the bids with Ellison Thrift, you're over $300,000 for that one.
So
I'm $7,000 shy. We just keep some Tanner, and then I'm over $300,000 shy if I include Ellison Thrift.
You got any money left in District 4?
Not enough that I can.
Not enough?
No. So what I'd say is, you know, I'd like to keep Ellison Thrift Road. I don't want to abandon Ellison Thrift Road. I want to keep it in the forefront so that if the time comes where we have the funding, Kenneth, I'd like to do it. So, you know, we... For sure, I don't want to abandon it totally, but I have two of them right now.
Okay. Well, and I structured my bid documents to alert the responders that you reserve that right to award portions of the bids, and that was my reasoning for separating the two, as well as requesting a total for the for both of them. Was in case we did get into budget conditions, that we would have an easy way to award a project without having to go back to the bidders.
Right. Well, I don't favor one over the other, but I have to do what's more prudent. And I feel like that right now that Hinkson Tanner is a better option. So, do you want us to wait for you to come back at another meeting, or do you want us to tentatively go ahead and, I mean, I don't see why we couldn't go ahead.
We can do the same thing as before, but we'll, you know, we'll obviously bring back our a subsequent agenda item that has the contract with it for that approval later.
Okay, so just wait then?
No, I would ask that you award it contingent on meeting the bid specifications. That way you can structure it to where you're only awarding a portion of it or the whole thing.
So, in that case then, I need a motion to take the available funds and pay for Kingston Chandler Road. Is that the right motion?
Yes, ma'am, but as I said, I'm about $7,000 shy, so how do you want to?
Take it out of mine. I've got $7,000.
Well, then just include that in your motion if you don't mind.
Okay, so if the motion will include too that the $7,000 shortage will come out of mine, District 4, road paving funds.
Yes, ma'am.
So, okay, would someone make that motion?
I second.
I'll make the motion, Thomas, you second. Then I have a question before we vote. Well, I can ask the question after we vote, if you want to.
Is that right?
All right, well, we got to tell you, where are we on Slaughter Road? We put some stakes up out there, my guy.
Yes, sir, Slaughter Road is, they finished the phase two plans, the 60%.
Yeah.
It's in utility review right now. So in the next few weeks, we should be getting back the phase three, which is the 90%.
Yeah.
That is true not only on Slaughter Road, but also true on Gas Plant.
Yeah, okay. So I'll let the commissioner worry about that.
Okay.
I'll take care of it.
Yeah, you take care of it.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Thank you, Kenneth, and thank you, board.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll move along to consent items. 7 through 19. There's one item 16A that I would like to have some discussion with. Don't necessarily, I think, need to pull it away from the consent item. I just want to discuss it. So if it's okay with the board.
Okay.
Okay. Item 16A, the way it's been, I think, it's unfair, and it really causes the great amount of heartburn for a renter that rents a mobile home to be denied assistance due to the age of the home. If a person rents a home, no matter what it is, and it's their choice, and it's the best that they can afford, then that should be the end of it. They should not be scrutinized and denied available assistance when they work hard for a home and they've been adversely affected by the COVID-19. And up until now, if we pass this, that's what it's been. You've got people that have applied that have ready mobile homes, and they're being asked to the age of the home. They've got to have proof of the age. They've got to prove that there's been an inspection done. And about that, I think it's also just unfair and very shameful that they have to give proof of an inspection before they can qualify. What would be the purpose of the inspection? I don't quite understand that. They've chosen the home that they need, and an inspection should not be required before they can qualify for assistance. We have to remember they have applied for this help because they have had an income loss due to the COVID-19, and they badly need the help. And I was thinking to myself, who appoints themselves as judge and jury as to whether these people give assistance based on the age of the home and based on whether it's had an inspection, and they have to give proof of that. And the whole thing is, this is not our SHIP program where we're doing a rehab or we're doing a demolition and a rebuild. We're just assisting. We just have some money available to us, and we're trying to assist some people that are in need because of the COVID. So, you can see that I think that was pretty ridiculous that they would have to go through that. And then another issue that I want to address is I've had a sister that's called me three times with concerns about the CARES Act funding. And the first time they called me was about the requirements that I just talk about the age of the home and the inspection. Then the second time, when they were at the place where they do all this business, they're supposed to be getting help. Then, you know, they were told when they went to get help that the person there told us that I'm new and I don't really know too much about this. And so they were not very much help. And I don't know if it was GSG or who, I'm not really quite sure, except that I know that happened. And then late this afternoon, I had another call and said that their paperwork had been lost and that they had to refax. So, and again, at the same time, they were still asked for proof of an inspection. So I'm wondering how many other people do we have in this county?
I'm a little confused. Help me out. Now, if I rent a mobile home, there's some assistance that I can have for rent.
Yeah.
But as I understood you to say, this individual that rents, they also have a loss of income.
Yes.
So they could be one of those 38 times in times.
Yes.
No.
Are you saying, uh-huh. Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Excuse me. Are you saying that they've applied for multiple types of assistance?
No, they applied as an individual for the CARES Act funding.
Okay.
Because of loss of wages, because they cannot.
That's what I thought.
Because they cannot.
Have to go home.
Have their rent.
Intertwined with.
It doesn't. So the 38 grants that we discussed are for business assistance.
Well,
this is individual assistance.
That's right.
So there are two different pots of money.
That's right.
And if I may, the particular program that did require that the mobile home could not be pre 1994, and does require an inspection to make sure that it meets Florida minimum housing standards. That is a rule of Florida Housing Finance Corporation. And that particular pot of money is being funneled, if you will, through Florida Housing Finance Corporation.
So the CARES Act funding is not any of the CARES Act funding?
Not of the county's CARES Act funding. So this was the $175,000 funds that's being basically funneled through like the SHIP program.
Yeah.
So the CARES Act funding is only for businesses then?
No, ma'am. We have.
I'm not understanding.
I'm not confused too all that.
I don't get it. I thought the CARES Act.
If you work out of your mobile home, let's say you do guard work or whatever, that's your business. You want to be just in time with your part of that. $10,000 times 38 in a business has got a great price.
Okay, we're talking about two different things. If I may, the CARES Act assistance that's being funneled through the Florida Housing Finance Corporation is the $175,000 that is over and above the county's CARES Act funds, which is the 940-906. So that's an additional pot of money that was given to Taylor County. And that is for rental assistance, utility assistance, and some repairs. Yes.
Can you apply for both?
I would have to check on that. I don't see why you couldn't. But on this particular, so what Commissioner Fiegel is speaking about are the rules that the Florida Housing Finance Corporation had in place. Once we received a concern, that's what we're bringing to the board to see if the board will allow pre-1994 homes, because we learned that there was an exception to that rule if the board will allow that.
So it's up to us. But how about an inspection?
From what I understand, the inspection is something that could not be waived because.
And what difference does that make? If people are in need and they have lost wages and they cannot pay their rent, what difference does it make to have an inspection? They're living in a home that they chose, probably because that's what they can afford.
Yes, ma'am.
And so, irregardless, if it's a three-bedroom, two-bath brick home, or whatever, if they need help, it should depend upon an inspection.
I understand.
That is so unfair. Now, okay, so the CARES Act, then how does the CARES Act money apply to somebody in this situation?
So once the $175,000 is spent, then the committee has set aside an additional $100,000 for this type of need. So what I am checking on now is to see if we have to follow any particular rules and regulations. I'm assuming we'll have to follow Treasury guidelines, but I have not received an answer to that as of yet. But once we spend the $175,000, then we can start spending the county CARES Act funds that have been set aside for the same needs.
Okay, so now let me stop you right there.
Okay.
So with the county CARES Act, the first go around is $950,000.
Yes.
And out of almost $1 million, we're only going to allocate $100,000 to individuals.
Well, that's because $175,000 was already allocated. That is what.
But it could be a where they can't use that if they have something that's too old or hasn't had an inspection on it.
But that's why I'm checking to see if Treasury rules are any different for the county CARES Act money. I understand what you're saying.
But to me, it's unfair at $1 million almost to allocate $100,000 to people in need. These are people that, no matter how much money they make or what they do, whether they clean houses or whether they, you know, some other occupation, to me it's still the same. But especially for these people in mobile homes, you know, I can identify with poor people. You know, I was brought up like that. I was not brought up with a silver spoon, and I was not brought up by a well-to-do family in town. And so I connect with people in need.
I understand.
And it seems like a very unequal.
Well, now remember that once the phase one funds are spent, and we'll be talking about that later this evening, then we will be eligible for an additional $727,000. And if the board wishes to make a larger part of that for individual assistance, that's certainly something that you can do.
But then how long would it be before these individuals that I've heard from that are in need now, you're gonna divvy out just a little tiny bit now and it may not work, and here you've got people suffering, and I to me, and maybe there's nothing that we can do, but I have to express my heartburn over poor people that need help and can't get it.
What kind of inspection are they talking about?
Just a home inspection. And you know, we lived in our house for 35 years and we never had an inspection except when we built it.
But that's easy. Somebody just come look at it one time, one day, and then it'll be inspected.
Right.
It shouldn't be no big one for all about funds if it's just a regular home inspection.
They shouldn't have to do that though, Commissioner.
It
shouldn't have to happen.
Let me say that if this is a rental house home, pre 1994 or whenever the date is or after, if you're renting a house, that's yours. That's the renter. The landlord, this is just too convoluted to be another thing.
But you know, still,
it's
not fair. It don't matter if the house is falling down. If that's a home they've chosen to rent and to live in, then that's their home. And they should not be took off the list and denied assistance because they don't live in a three-bedroom, two-bath brick home. And that's where I find it to be unequal and unfair.
What's the cost of inspection, you
know? I have no idea. But the it should be part of the equation. They need help.
Maybe they could fund them the cost of the inspection and go along with the rest of the money.
I don't know that there's an additional charge for the inspection. From what I understand, our representative would do that inspection just like we do for ship houses.
So we're just not telling you that to pay for?
No, I don't believe so.
Well, what is he looking for? Is he going to deny if it's not up to his standard?
It wouldn't be up to his standard. It's Florida Building Code standard.
That's true. I would argue to the end of the day that these people, that's their home that they have right now, and they should not be denied because for any reason, if they have suffered wage losses due to COVID-19. Commissioner Gibbs?
Yeah. What Chip does is, if you want repair to the house, that inspector goes out and he says it doesn't work repair. We need to tear it down and rebuild it. And that's what that Chip does. The $175,000 for replace something like an air conditioning unit, if they had small repairs, to go ahead and do that. But if they had major repairs, the best one would go to the CHIP program. $750,000.
But as I say, these are renters, and they're not looking for a remodel or a repair or a demolition. They're looking for some personal help.
And I understand that. And I do know people who have gotten some help. They've gotten some rent. They've got some utility bills paid, and that's what they want to do. That's $175,000.
Right.
And that should be given pretty quick if they go ahead and qualify. And I know we all stick with rules. Sometimes you need them, and sometimes it's a bar for you. You know, a fence when you go there. But anybody that needs rent, and out of a job, I don't care if you live in a pig pen.
That's right.
Then we need to go ahead and talk.
That's right.
I think it's left up to this board to override that. You know, he might be living with the 2002 mobile home that was in bad shape or a rental house.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I would say that if the board overrides that and assistance is given and we do not follow the rules, then I would say that there's a possibility that any funds paid may have to be paid back.
Well, yeah. Will we reset that point?
Sure. Well, I'm not suggesting, not for a second, that we do something that would cause us to have to repay it out of our money, because we can't afford to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is that this process is not fair. And like this commissioner said, it don't matter if they live in a pig pen. It's their home, and they deserve help with their rent the same as you mentioned utilities. They need rent money just the same as they need utilities. And when I look at this, I'm trying to have a lot of heartburn on this because.
Well, what I would say is the action, if the board approves this, will go a long way towards helping as many people as possible. Because
this person, even today, about an inspection. They're asking her, does she have proof of an inspection? But now you're saying that the CHIP people do this. So see, somebody doesn't know what they're doing.
Well, I can check into that. And I apologize, that was my understanding when I researched it Friday, was that the inspection would also actually be performed by our consultant. But I'll make sure of that. But
what if the house doesn't pass the inspection? If it doesn't pass the inspection, then you don't get any money. They might offer under the CHIP program build a new house.
Here's what I would offer the board is once we finish researching any treasury rules about the county CARES Act funds that have been set aside for individual assistance. My question would be, is if people who do not qualify under these particular funds, if they would perhaps qualify under the county funds, and that's something that I'm trying to get some answers on. We need to research treasury guidelines, which we started this process last week, to see if perhaps for the individual assistance on the County CARES Act funds, if it would require the inspection and or anything like that, to try to make sure that anyone who is denied assistance under the SHIP funds that are funneled to the SHIP program, if we could offer them help another way. I don't have the answer to that yet, but that is what I'm searching for.
Okay, now for a while, they said that people could not be evicted when they were behind. Is that still in place?
I believe the governor's executive order maybe put an end to that.
So that's expired, so this is for people who would be potentially thrown out and be homeless on the street. So we don't have a lot of time.
I think what his order said was is that there are some CDC guidelines that that the landowner has to follow. But there's nothing that the state's done that says that the state stuff expired about evicting people, but there are still some guidelines that the landlord has to follow, but their CDC guidelines, not state authority guidelines.
And but let me say this, and that's still for the people that were laid off by the 150 of COVID that were received the dime. And I think the COVID, everybody's working virtually, they're not in the office, and they have a miscommunication. I can personally tell you that some people that haven't received one dime since they've been laid off. And when you talk to them, it takes you a half a day to come get them. Because they put you on that line, you got to hold up the phone line for a half a day.
And then they lose paperwork, and this and that and the other. But here's my concern too. There have been a number of renters in this county, I understand, that have been denied. And so, it's, from what I understand, it's on a first-come, first-served basis. So while they're over here, worried about being thrown out of their house and being homeless, trying to find an inspection that I'm understanding now, they don't even have to be the one to worry about it, that the people would shift through it, and the age of the home, then you've got all these other people now applying. So these people who came in first and have been denied, and all these other people coming in, are they getting ahead of these people? Are they trying to go through the system to figure out how to do all this, and when the paperwork is lost?
That's from my understanding, and from what I understand, that the program is first come, first served. If the board approves amending the CRF, renters and owners of mobile homes who have already received denial of assistance letters will be contacted and will receive funding assistance before new applicants.
Well, some of these people may not have been denied. They're still searching around trying to find out what's the age of the home and who was the last inspection when it was done, because somebody is not offering clear communication. And that's, I mean, I just want to make sure that everybody's on the same page and that whoever's doing this work is qualified, that can help these people. They can give them the right information. And obviously it sounds like that they don't always have the right information. And that they're, that even though if they have been up there and applied with their application, that their number's still there. If they're number 10 or if they're number 2 or if they're number 15, that they don't go to number 39.
I understand.
Because they've been waiting all this red tape stuff.
I was reassured late last week that we have a list of anyone who has received letters of denial, and that those people would be contacted, and we would let them know that they would perhaps, you know, they could perhaps qualify.
Okay, so my number is 850-838-7323. If there's anybody out there that's having the same kind of problem, just call me. I'd like to hear about it. I don't know what I can do, but I'd like to know how many people out there are getting lost in the system because of this. 838-7323.
That's been my problem all along. Those who need it don't get it. Those who got it, get more.
I want to hear from
that's
people.
All right.
That's my job, and I'm very passionate about helping these people that need help. Okay. Any I'm sorry, it took so long, but it had to be said. Are there any concerns with the consent agenda? If not, is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Motion to approve.
One second.
I have a motion by Commissioner Moody, second by Commissioner Murphy. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Public request, number 20. The board considers a request to waive penalties today or stay or pay of fines, new, pro, tunk.
Not pro tunk.
Tunk, pro tunk, new, pro tunk. I did this.
That's a Latin term. Not pro tunk. That means go back.
Right. I Googled it today trying to figure out how to pronounce it. Okay, to May 17, 2020, and to stay accrual of fines going forward until the Circuit Court for Taylor County issues a ruling Dowling appeal as approved by Brian Rogers, Senior Associate with Robinson, Kenyon, and Cleveland, PA. Mr. Bishop.
Do you have Mr. Rogers on the phone?
I'm not sure.
Okay, well, if he comes on, let me know, okay?
Okay.
All right, what happened in this case was that the Dowlings bought some property down at the beach. It was over the water. And I'm giving you as short as I can on this. And they wanted approval to put what I called a screened room over the water. And there were some pilings there. And they got the deed from the state, and then they had to get approval from the Army Corps of Engineers. And they got approval from the Corps of Engineers, and then Ms. Downey had a email discussion with a lady from the Corps, and Ms. Downey asked, and this was late in the process, Ms. Downey asked the lady from the Corps, what about adding to it or changing this into something other than a screen room or a screen porch, I mean. So, and the Corps said, well, is it on the same footprint? In other words, it's not making it more square footage. And Ms. Downing said, no, it's the same. But then she started asking about turning this place into a room to an actual living facility with a sink and a bathroom and a shower and all kinds of things where you could live in. And the Corps lady, really, I don't think she understood exactly what Ms. Downing was saying. And so 3 weeks later, Ms. Downing goes ahead and she had a contractor to do that and added to it without getting any okay from the county. Okay, so it all gets built, and then our inspector sees it on Facebook and says, hey, that wasn't what it was supposed to be. And there was they were issued a ticket, and they came before, you know, we need to work on getting a board of adjustment. But anyway, for lack of a better term, we used a magistrate to hear it. So the Dallas come before the magistrate, and the Dallas attorney says, well, you know, you can't do this because you don't have jurisdiction to do that to the magistrate, but he stipulated to the fact that the magistrate could hear it. And he also stipulated to the fact that she had violated our code. They stipulated, but wanted to have a defense, which would be an equitable defense, that she really didn't mean to do anything wrong, and that she had built this home, for lack of a better term, over the water. So the magistrate ruled against her, and had a long, very copious order which set out everything, all the issues, and issued a penalty, also a penalty order later on. And the penalty order was $50 a day or something like that. The code provides that they can file, meaning the Downs can file a petition for a writ of certiorari to go to circuit court. Well, you're supposed to do that within 30 days, but being the nice guy that I am, I let them get away with it, let them file late. So they filed a petition for writ of certiorari. Well, that is a direct appeal to the circuit court. And so we had a hearing on that, and the judge said, okay, Mr. Bishop, you've got to respond to this petition for writ of certiorari, which I have done, which my position for the county, and, oh, by the way, when they came before the board, one of the board members was not here, and it ended up in a 2-2 vote, which affirms the magistrate. And if I remember correctly, he was asked, I think it was by Commissioner Page, do you want to wait and do it with a full board? And the lawyer said, no, go ahead. If I recall, I'm pretty sure of that. I'm never 100% sure of anything with this day and time, 2020. But anyway, so their appeal to the board was denied because they didn't have a 3-2 vote. And then we filed this petition for writ of certiorari, and I have responded to that petition for writ of certiorari. And my position was that the magistrate, and I'm not going to go through everything on it, but that the magistrate was correct and that the board was correct in its response in denying their appeal. Now, the judge gave me 18 days to file that, and I filed it within like 15 days. Then gave them 20 days to respond to mine. So there'll be one more thing that they'll respond to, and the court will either say, I'm going to grant the petition for writ of certiorari, and you know, you're fine, Mr. and Ms. Downing. By the way, Mr. Downing has passed away. And I think it's on, I think you're trying to sell it now. So, but the fines are continuing on. And what they're trying to do is trying to stay those fines. Well, to be consistent, my position is, and this of course is up to y'all, my position is to be consistent in what we've done with regard to the other ones, that my position would be that I don't know that the state should be granted, that let's just see what the court is going to rule with regard to the his petition for writ of certiorari.
Now, I've got a couple of questions. Since it was a 2-2 vote, and had we had a full board, and obviously the votes would have been different, would that have made a difference in the process going forward?
Oh, it very well could have. It could. But see, don't forget that the law, you know, the Downs are bound by what their lawyer does. You're bound by what your lawyer does. And if I'm remembering wrong, you know, y'all correct me, but if I was representing the Downings, I more than likely would have said, no, I want a full board.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
But he didn't say that, didn't get that. And of course, it could have been 3-2 to deny, it could have been 3-2 to grant. But my position and my answer to the petition for writ of certiorari, she pled like ignorance, you know. The order that was done by Mr. Curtis, I think she knew exactly what she was doing. And so it's violated of the Taylor County Code. Now, the judge might say, you know, their equitable defenses were fine, you know, and grant the petition for no sociority. So she's got a house over the water that violates, you know, the code.
And they're asking us to stay the penalties.
Stay the penalties.
And have to give them all the penalties back before a certain term?
Yes, sir.
So there'd be no penalties at all.
Well, it's up to a certain point. Then, if the judge rules for us, then there's going to be some penalties.
Yes, okay.
Right.
She started off with springboard, ended up with a half foot. Like
not bigger, but a lot of stuff in there.
The way I feel about it, she knew what she was doing. You don't go and add a bunch of stuff in there like that, knowing that you got a permit for a springboard.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm up for taking their time away.
I like to give people the benefit of the doubt. Is she an elder in my age? Yes, sir. I just, you know, there's a possibility that she really misunderstood. How can we be the judge of that?
Well, that's why you have a magistrate listening to it, and he decided and listened to the credibility of the various witnesses and what was presented.
So our options tonight are to waive the penalties or...
Deny. What you do is you deny the request for the stay.
And the stay
or
means...
Or you can grant the stay.
The stay means...
The stay means that if you'll read this, he's asking for the stay back to May 17th, 2020.
Does that mean forgive? Does stay mean forgive?
Well, ultimately it probably would.
But that depends on the ruling.
It depends on Judge Parker's ruling.
Okay, but Judge Parker went, is going to circuit court.
It's in circuit court right now, sir.
Okay. Judge Parker will determine whether she was right or wrong.
Whether
and if he ruled that she was right or in her favor,
No penalties. No fines.
All right.
And
I think we're on the circuit judge.
Sir?
We're on the circuit judge.
Well, the presumption of innocent until proven guilty.
Yeah.
So.
That's how I feel.
Right. It's gone that far. It's in the judge's chamber. It's been filed.
What the judge has to do, Commissioner Murphy, is he has to, number one, read Mr. Ray Curtis's order, which I'm sure y'all have read, it's very lengthy, and then read Mr. Rogers' petition for writ of certiorari, then read my response to that. I gave you the short version, and then read the other response that they give. You know, my position was that I was doing what I thought was best for the county in filing that response because the judge told me to do it, and I'm trying to be consistent with regard to what the code enforcement people have done.
If you let them get away with doing that, the next one, you'll be set the precedent for the next one to do it, and the next one to do it right after that, you know, and then what are you going to do?
Well, I think the code enforcement dropped the ball. That's my opinion, and we should stay the fines. It's in court. Then we'll hash it out in court, because all the evidence is going to come out both ways.
Well, it's already come out. Okay. It's an appeal. It's just like an appeal. That's that. And the court has to read, it's supposed to read all sides to make the decision.
Okay. And the court's going to be looking at what we do here tonight, right?
I don't think that's an issue for the court to determine at this particular point because he asked for the stay before the court and the court told him to come before y'all with regard to the stay. He tried to get the stay in front of the court and didn't get it granted.
So now he's asking us for the stay.
He's asking, yeah, which is totally proper. He can ask for the stay.
What was the expression of denial on the judge's behalf?
Say what?
What was the judge's expression of denial? Why did he give that?
Well, because if there's an issue of whether it's administrative or whether it's judicial, and it got into a bunch of legalese and stuff, and decided that the better thing to do would be for them to come and ask for the stay in front of this Board of County Commissioners, because y'all are closer to the issue than the judge. But the judge is going to, again, read what we've done and make a decision for us.
I would be in favor of the stay. But does someone want to offer a motion?
I might make not to go against our building budget. That's the way I feel about it. If you start getting let the thing go like that, you'll have a mess.
But that's not what an option for a motion. I would think it says that there would be a motion to waive penalties or
stay
the accrual, not to go against the code enforcement.
I'm not going to waive my penalty. Well, that's my motion.
What is your motion?
Not waive penalties.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second for discussion purposes.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Moody and a second by Commissioner Page. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed same sign. Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Okay. On to item 20. Well, right now, if it's okay, if it pleases the board, would it be okay to go ahead and go to item 27? That is the one that Pat is here for. Instead of making him wait for two more hours or more? Is that okay with the board? Okay, so that's right. Let's skip over to item 27. The board to discuss executive order 20-244. The current local state of emergency and county operations and facilities as agendas by the county administrator. Yes, sir.
Governor DeSantis issued an executive order 20-244 on September 25th. This order initiated phase 3 of the state SMART step-by-step plan for Florida's recovery. This plan contains minimum recommended health protocols and instructs individuals and businesses to adhere to all public guidance by federal, state, and local officials. Per the guidance of the state, public health advisory, and the CDC, we have been limiting occupancy of our community centers and county extension for rentals to allow for 6-foot social distancing. This is achieved by a formula that had so kindly provided to me, where we multiply, we take the square footage and divide it by the square footage of a 6-foot circle, which equals 113 square feet. Renters are also asked to check temperatures of all who attend the function, wear masks, and obtain signed waivers of liability for all attendees. As of today, the Department of Health and the CDC guidance has not changed. The Department of Health guidance is, number one, residents are advised to wear face coverings if social distancing is not possible. Number two, refrain from gatherings of more than 10 people. Number three, avoid crowds, close spaces, and close contact. The CDC guidance prevention policies encourage the use of mask at events, social distancing, and physical barriers, to name just a few of the considerations for gatherings and events. Members of the public are asking that the board reopen county facilities. So my question is, does the board wish to reopen county buildings and facilities? If so, what restrictions would you wish to see in place? I would recommend that, to keep our workforce healthy, you consider the wearing of facial coverings, temperature screening, and some form of limited capacity at this time. I would ask that you consider rental facilities separately than county department facilities to consider continuity of operations.
Okay, Pat, would you like to speak?
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I do just want to give you a quick update this morning where we are. I know my department puts out a lot of press releases, and that's not out to everybody. And again, they're painting a picture which is statewide, but I do would like to bring you to the perspective of Clark County still. Just today, we had 12 new cases that came in. That has been consistent. We have somewhere between three to 10 cases every day, and we have for quite some time. It has not gone down, has it gone up? And we're having the same amount of cases. We've had recently, we've had deaths, and I don't see that changing in the near future. I do see that things nationwide and statewide are improving, but locally, we're still in the same state of affairs we were last time I was here, the time before that, is that we still have a lot of community spread going on. So my encouragement for you is, I'm not trying to say things are terrible, or gloom and doom, terrible about it. I am saying though, but I'm encouraging you to stay the course, if at all possible. I'm not trying to kill your businesses, I'm not trying to kill people being able to do their thing, but I'm trying to keep them from getting hurt. So again, I'm encouraging you, if at all possible, put as many safeguards in as you can so you can still do your business, but protect the individuals and your employees. That's my recommendation for you.
Well, I'm confused because I don't know whether to listen to you or you've got the governor that's pretty much opened up everything as it was. Basically, you're on your own. And I don't know legally what we're supposed to do. I'm really confused. I don't know which way to be. I mean, I know in my heart what I want to do, but I don't know. I just don't know.
Understood. And would love to take some of that burden away from me, but I do believe in the end the burden will be for the locals to determine how they have to protect their individuals. I will say that the governor's most recent executive order on this particular subject, it really only did three things. And one of those that's caught the most attention of people is said that it removed the ability of local authorities to assess fines. It didn't remove the local authority to make requirements. It didn't remove the local's abilities to, for example, say, hey, we're going to have this requirement when people come in our door, or this is how we're going to protect our employees. It did remove their ability to charge fines.
And you know, it's like talking out of both sides of your mouth. You know, local governments, you can tell people that you want them to wear a mask, but you can't do anything about it. And so you're just hoping that, you know, people will want to take care of themselves and family and friends and everybody, because I think it's proven, and you hear it over and over and over again, that wearing a mask would save lives. And that's from the scientists, the health officials, not from politicians. So, in other words, so right now, we can still say we would like you to wear your mask. And would like to take a temperature, but if somebody comes up and says, you're not taking my temperature, we can't force them, right?
I would have to defer to your legal counsel, but you would have to find that.
And if you refuse entry for them because they won't let you take their temperature or put a mask on, then come back and help me out a little bit.
Well, let me just say this, and I'm not going to answer your question directly, but I'm going to say this. I have a business. I'll tell you how I do my business. I have a sign out front on my door, and if you come to see me and you open up the door to come to see me and you don't have a mask on, I say, where's your mask? And they say, oh, it's out in the truck. I say, go get it. Okay, and if they say, I don't have a mask, then I say, Jamie, go get this gentleman or this lady a mask. And then I'm going to tell them, I'm going to say, okay, you need to stay 6 feet away from me because I'm 73 years old and I don't want to die. Mm-hmm. I tell them that I'm bossy And then I say, come on, we go upstairs and we'll have our conference. And that's how I do it. And that's my office, and I feel like I can do what I want to do at my office. And if you don't like it, you don't have to come to my office. Now, there's a difference, though, with regard to the county. Okay? But what the governor has said, if he leaves it to local government home rule, I think that these folks who work here in this office have the right to be saved. Okay? And with that in mind, if somebody, comes in and doesn't want their temperature taken and doesn't want a mask, I would say to them, well, you need to just call us then. You know, call us on the phone or email us. Email to it. And that's, you know, that's one that's got some sense to it, you know. Or fax it to me, fax your question to me. And we'll be glad to do everything we can to make sure that you get your permit or whatever. Because the wearing of a mask is not going to stop you from getting the virus, as I understand it. It's stopping me from giving it to you because I've got a mask on, right? Am I correct on that?
Yes,
the whole thing about the mask. It's a thing of, and I think it's been proven, you know, you talk about proven, you know, by the greater weight of the evidence. I think by the greater weight of the evidence that this mask stops the spread.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It does. I mean, look at what happened at the Rose Garden. It stops the spread. And the Constitution says, and y'all all swore that you would adhere to the Constitution of the state of Florida and the United States Constitution when you took your oath of office. And that means prepare and for the general welfare of your constituents. Correct? Okay. So, in answer to your question, and again, it shouldn't really be political. It should be just, you just say, but I would say to LaWanda, if somebody comes and they say that they will not wear a mask and they won't have their temperature taken, they'll say, okay, we're not going to make that happen, but we want you to go back and get on your cell phone and call us and tell us what you want, and we'll provide it for you. Or email, or fax. And that's my answer, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay, so the same thing then, for all practical purposes then, we could stay the course that we ask people to wear their mask and have their temperature taken and come up with different suggestions to the ones that don't want to do that. Yeah.
One other thing, though, I did read where that we're supposed to open up our meetings, right?
In November.
I'll take it for that. Okay. I didn't want anybody to think that I hadn't read that.
Yeah. So this what we're talking about tonight then would be until November, and then when we have to, I guess we have to open up our meetings to the public then. But can we still limit how many people come in, or does it have to be, we could still limit?
The only thing that currently you're being prevented from doing is assigning a fee.
Okay.
So I mean, you can require, and I'm just making a point, man. Okay. I'm trying to make a point, the simple one is, you can require the people to wear shoes and shirts.
Sure.
There's no fine associated with that. No, you're going to come into this building, you're going to wear some shoes, and you're going to wear a shirt, and you're going to, if you so choose, wear a mask. If you don't choose to do those things, then again, your legal counsel is giving you some advice and saying, look, give them alternatives. Give them alternatives. An alternative way of getting those services. But in the end, you're protecting your employees.
And then when it comes to the meetings, even now, we're not denying anyone access to this public meeting. that they not can physically walk in here, but they have access to this meeting by way of a couple of means, and it can remain that way. For me, I'm like you, Conrad, I'm not ready to go yet. I want to live a little bit longer, yes ma'am.
If I may, there's really two different, well, more than two different questions. The first question is opening county buildings to the public, which would include the courthouse, because we would be responsible for the lobby area and other county facilities. If so, what guideline safeguards would you like to have in place? Wearing a mask, taking temperature. I think the biggest impact is if we restrict how many people can come into the facility. And that, you know, that would take a little more work to get that in place.
Now that would be here, that would be community centers, that would be the courthouse.
Well, I'm saying if we could, can we consider, maybe we need to talk about that separately.
Talk about what separately?
The county departments versus our rental facilities.
Okay.
And I would say we probably need to talk about the sports complex as well. So, if I may, my questions say about county buildings and our departments. If we open to the public, we would need a date certain. I would ask for maybe a week, so we would open on October 12th. Can we ask people to wear masks and have their temperatures taken, and do you want to limit the occupancy? So, as an example, for this building, if we take the square footage and divide by 113, that means we can fit about 4 people in the lobby. The courthouse lobby would be 9 people. The library would be about 35 people, I believe.
I like that. And see, now that works for me, and to keep the mask and the temperature in place.
Yeah.
That works for me.
You gotta have a mask. You got any temperature taken?
Right.
You don't want to do that?
And limit how many people?
Limit how many people
come in.
And I'm asking for October 12th, so I have a little bit of time to communicate with the constitutional officers so they make sure they have everything set up and that we can have appropriate signage. We would also need to place signs on the restroom doors asking for a limited amount of people, and I would think the elevators. We would want to limit to one person per elevator unless they're part of a family group. Is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, so how do y'all feel?
I feel darn good.
So,
35 is the library, you said?
And 35 or 38. So we would take the square footage and we would divide. I think it's 38.
So that's pertaining to government-owned buildings, not the leased buildings.
Well, I'm talking about our county operations at this time.
Okay.
And the
sheriff's courthouse.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, so I think you're just eliminating, like you said, the rental and the sports complex for right now.
For right now.
Okay. So.
Yeah,
we go over there, we go to the lobby in the courthouse, and you divide by this 112 figure you come up with. It's about 13, that's about accurate. I mean, 112 might be, but if you have a bunch of circles, you got a lot of square footage, you know, outside of any circle. Follow me?
Say it one more time, I'll start, sir.
This is not that right.
So you're talking about square footage versus
square footage.
What is that? Magical distance, 6 foot?
It's 6 feet. So it's
6 feet. And you let the circle touch. You see all that little area in here between the circle?
Yeah.
That's unaccounted for. I don't know a better way to determine the number, but do it the way you did it.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you, Belanda asked me, that was my quick math. I did turn around and ask, by the way, several engineers who gave me answers that were about this long.
Yeah.
They added a couple other concepts of saying, okay, so if none of these could ever touch, how would you do it? Blah, blah, blah. To be honest, I gave you the simple math version, which is just the square footage of a 6 foot circle, and then taking that into account. I would encourage you, if it works out for you and your facilities, just mark it on the floor if you haven't stopped by the health department. You probably go to most grocery stores, you see any markings. That just help encourage saying, okay, if I'm addressing the chairwoman, you know, this is how close I am to the next person that has a little mark, so stand back here, and then you got one in front of the door, so stand over here. You know, it just helps encourage that setback.
And we can do that.
Let me finish my discussion that started here. You determine the square footage in the lot in your house. And you said we can have how many?
Nine people in our house.
Nine people.
In the lobby.
All right. And you have one of those exits to go into the clerk's office or somewhere else. You don't let another one in.
Yes.
And then when you get to the tax collector or wherever you want to go in the courthouse, then he's got his signage. You gotta have a mask on in here or whatever. I don't think I can come up with a better plan.
Gary, do you agree with what we're saying?
Yep. So I think what would probably happen is, like, for instance, in our office, like on one side, you probably only put one person inside. It's very small. Mm-hmm. So if there were several people, then we'd have one inside, and we'd have markings in the lobby, wait here, and then the sheriff department would be responsible for if they had a lobby full, so we don't need 11 more people in, you know, until, you know, someone exits.
If somebody else leaves.
So there'll be limits to inside the office also, which will probably be one at our office, because it's just, with the glass and everything, it's just not a lot of room. But for probably one person in each office.
If you have nine at the lobby, and they disperse, and then you're going to have nine more at the lobby.
Right.
And then if somebody comes out of the courthouse, you can let another one in. Mm-hmm. Or like a courtroom.
Correct. The court system would have jurisdiction over that. And they do have a rule that masks were mandatory during court days, but that's still very inconsistent if that's the only time people would be asked to don a mask. So we're asking that at the entry to the courthouse or any other county facility that we have signage, and we ask people to stop, we check their temperature, ask them to don a mask, and then we attempt to limit the number of people in the
I like this. It works for me.
It works for me.
Me too.
Yeah.
Everybody in agreement with that?
Yeah, I'm signing that between now and 1 week from now. You said October 12th.
I think so.
That's
yes.
It.
Is that
yeah,
good?
We do. Yeah. And you know, I think we
need a motion. Mm-hmm. Make motion.
Exactly.
What, who made the motion?
I did.
Oh, okay. So we've got a motion for what we just discussed for the county facilities, excluding the sports complex and the rentals.
Correct.
And then we have a second by Commissioner Dix. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carried. And now let's discuss the rental facilities.
So we've been using the same formula at the rental facilities and also requiring people who attend functions of the rental facilities to sign a hold harmless, have their temperature taken, and to wear masks. So since the governor's executive order, I have had several requests from people who would wish to resume activities at our rental facilities. And without the, I think without all of the rules we have in place, especially the ones that would limit capacity, that seems to be what is giving people the most heartburn. And I understand that because the occupancy is quite low at our community centers when we apply this formula. And because some of the people who utilize the community center, they use it for fundraisers, they're very concerned about their events. They have asked that the board reconsider the safeguards that are in place.
Okay, now remember what Pat said. Every day, our numbers are still holding steady with few cases, and we still are having deaths occur. And I understand somebody wanting to have a fundraiser for whatever reason, but like Conrad said, we took an oath to protect the safety and health and welfare of our citizens. So for me, it's a no-brainer what we do.
So you wish to stay the course?
Yes.
Stay the course.
Stay the course.
Does everybody in agreement?
That will have a temperature taken, the whole harness, and you can determine how many people can be at that event.
Well, and I understand. I know that some of our Steinhatchee residents in particular are very eager to get back to some of their meetings, some of the different events that they have. And I completely understand. The only, and I know it's the same situation at all of the rental facilities. The only relief I would know to offer is that if perhaps they could have their events outside.
Like sports complex.
Or even outside at Steinhatchee Community Center or Shady Grove Center. Instead of being indoors, the weather's nicer now. If they could be outdoors, I would need to get some guidance as far as, you know, how, what type of safeguards we would need to have in place for that.
And just, I have not had a chance to talk to the one about this, so this is new information for her. Again, on CDC's recommendation comes down, and CDC, we, Department of Health follows CDC's recommendations, and at the end of it says, stay 6 foot apart. If you can't stay 6 foot apart, mask. Avoid, if at all possible, indoor events, etc. But they do have a specific recommendation to talk about outdoor events to where there would be more people than 10 people. You know, the Department of Health's recommendation is to try to stay in groups of less than 10. But if you can't mask, if you can't stay with, you have to get closer than 6 foot to mask up. I think you can. I think you could, especially in outdoors. Those are the events. If you're going to have an event, you can have it outdoors. Again, I know that's not always possible.
Is there a maximum attendance for an outdoor event? I thought I saw 250 somewhere, but that may be old guidance.
I think that was some of the older, and okay. Some of that I think went out when they started the sports stuff up again.
Okay.
So that's, you know, that started up some of that events.
You know, if you have an outdoor event, say at one of the community centers, and you choose to go there, and you choose not to wear a mask, then just like the wise word from this wise commissioner here, you're on. And I'm being very serious. Yeah. That's why it works, you know?
If you don't wear a mask, you're affecting the others around you.
But then you need to get away from it.
You leave. If you're there, okay. and you're in a situation, you're on your own. Either stay or leave.
So that leads me to my final question. If folks want to have outdoor events and say, you know, there's 100 attendees, are we going to, or really, I guess it doesn't matter, but do we need to continue to require signed hold harmless waivers from folks, whether it's an indoor event or an outdoor event or any event?
They're going to need a restroom no matter what. But you might as well get the waiver signed.
Okay.
So we're going to have the waiver, and we're going to still have signs for masks. Mm-hmm. And now how about temperature checks? Right.
Well, so what the requirement is now is that anyone who wishes to rent a county facility or have an event at the sports complex, we ask them to submit a safety plan. And we look for the wearing of masks, checking temperatures, and social distancing.
Okay.
And so it could vary with events, and invariably I send them to PAD unless it's a carbon copy of another one. And I would say the next hurdle I expect we'll have is when it comes to team sports.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we ask for a lead safety plan. Because people want to use the sports complex facilities, they want to have practice, they want to have league sports, and they do not wish, I think it's, they don't understand why we would require that when other facilities may not. So I just want to make sure we're all on the same page and that this is something that the board wishes moving forward, that we have the exact same requirements that we had several months ago when it comes to any of our facilities, and that's the submission of a safety plan and some, wearing masks, if possible. Obviously, if children are playing ball, we can't expect them to wear masks when they're running around on the field, but that's something that's normally part of the safety plan.
Okay, so simplify just for us.
Right.
Let's do the rental facilities first and vote on that, and then let's go to the sports, the outdoor activities to include the sports complex.
Okay.
So for the rental facilities, we're gonna ask people to wear masks, have their temperature taken, social distance, a safety plan, and limit the number of people according to the square footage. Did I cover everything?
Yes.
And other arms?
Yes.
Yeah. Is there a motion for that?
I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say aye. Motion carries. Now let's go to outdoors, whether it be outdoors of a rental facility or the sports complex or a park. What about our parks, like Keaton and Southside, Hodges and Southside? And
we don't require a permit for any type of an event.
Okay, so we just want to do sports complex and outdoors of rental facilities.
Yes, ma'am.
Forest at the Hall, Skin Hatchy, Shady Grove. Mm-hmm. What else do we have? Okay, so we want a safety plan, a home harness, a mask.
The whole harness would work at the beach.
No, it wouldn't. Even I'm thinking that Forest at the Hall, when you have these big events, I'm thinking of the bluegrass things that's put on by the chamber. That would be.
That's tough on there.
But you are going to require a safety plan.
Yeah, safety plan.
Where they'll be able to, if you can't plagiarize from other events that have gone on.
If they're outside, it's about. A ball game or just a place you can wear a mask. Maybe limit how many people can get this pumpkin. But then I go back, we had a blood ball in that week. We then give them a permit, I guess is the right word, but then do what they want to do that.
So I guess to simplify it, it would be outdoors of at least facilities and the sports complex.
County owned facilities.
Right.
Yeah.
Just county owned facilities.
Yeah.
So we want a safety plan.
Yeah.
And we ask them to wear masks.
Mm-hmm. I don't
know. Okay. Anything else?
We're going to do temperature checks.
I think well, too.
Like at the sports complex?
Yeah,
we really haven't had any organized sports really in several months, but I would expect after the holidays it will start up again. So I think that if you are out, if a league is or a team is practicing there or a particular sport is practicing, we can ask for a safety plan, we can ask for a hold harmless agreement, we can ask. And temperature check, I would think, would be within the safety plan.
Mm-hmm. And all those that I have read, by the way, did include that. They have included that. But on especially since you're talking about teams, they would check temperatures at these intervals with these and this amount of contact. And also, they talk about how they can keep the kids separated as much as possible so that they can compartmentalize in case there is an outbreak. So all the ones I've seen, especially from the organized whether it be Little League, Hoffman, et cetera, they're all really good plants, to be honest, folks. They really are. They're thoughtful.
Okay, is there a motion for the outside environmentals and for the sports complex?
I'm going to get a motion.
Second.
Okay, we got a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carried. Then we're going to leave each of those places as is. Just
yes, ma'am. We don't require a comment for those areas.
Now, I noticed that I saw signs over in Jefferson County where they're advertising for flag football. Do you know anything about how they're doing that? Other counties have opened up some of their recreation.
Yes, I have. I know that Leon, for example, just started there looking and they were starting to open up their parks and allowing those events. Again, what I have read and seen is the mother organizations, I don't know the correct term, but the, you know, Pop Warners,
yeah.
Little League, they've come out with their safety plans, and that's what everybody's taking and using.
Is that something we want to talk about, Sean? We want to talk about that? For
Pop Warner? Do we have
to allow these little teams, soccer and flag football and all, to begin or to have the option to. Is that something we need to discuss?
Oh, well, so the plan that we currently have is that the sports complex is open for the public to use. And the requirement is they submit a safety plan and it be approved by the Department of Health. And then they are free to use it as long as they
whether it's PSA or flag or whatever. Okay. That's good. And we're not holding them back from that. But did we cover everything?
I think so.
I think we got it. I think you didn't remember all of it.
Now the meeting's coming up in November, then we can still limit the number of people and the requirements, right?
Okay. Understanding of the word.
Okay. Thank you for coming. We really appreciate it. I'm sorry that I didn't think, yeah, this is your job. I remember sometimes I could get you in quicker so you could get out.
Yeah, very fine. If I could, I would just want to throw out, because of that, I was here for multiple things today. I want to thank the board, but that's all right. You approved our core contract. Right. The Department of Health are very appreciative of the funding you give us. It helps us significantly, and we want to know that the Health Department is doing everything we can to protect everyone. I know we're kind of dead center in the middle of the events going on right now, but I want you to know year round, we're doing everything we can to get everybody immunized, get our children to stop using tobacco, help our young mothers learn how to raise a healthy child, and how to have successful pregnancies. So we're there for you, and if there's ever anything you ever need as a board, we'd be glad to get it for you, any information we can.
Well, we appreciate your service to the community. Now, finish your retirement day.
Whoa, what are you bringing up? Look at me right here. Oh, look at that. It's 139 working days. Now, calendar days, it's a little longer, but April 23rd is my supposed last day to see how that works out. COVID may change that for everything.
Well, again, thank you for the service that y'all provide. You do a good job. Well, thank you for being here when we asked everything.
Anytime.
Thanks.
Commissioner Siegel, if I may, from what I understand, is it the attorney Ryan Rogers is on the line and wanted to ask a question? Can we take that question?
Okay, now that's going back to to 20, out of number 20?
Yes.
Sure. Go ahead, sir.
Good evening, Madam Chairwoman, and the other honorable commissioners. I was on hold here. I just didn't know how to make it go off hold, so I appreciate you taking a minute. Let me clarify something.
Sure. Go ahead.
First of all, I know you announced my firm's name. I'm actually, just for the record, I'm now actually back at the state attorney's office as an assistant state attorney, and I'm finishing up some issues for Robert Buchanan and Kendra, some of the things that I had at that time. But with respect to ordinances for Dillon County that is spelled out in the Florida Rules of Appellate Procedure. I'm simply asking to not have her be fined during that period of time that she's appealing. So in other words, if the circuit court rules in my client's favor, the fines wouldn't be relevant anyway because she won the case. But if they circuit court rules against her, then the fines would start up again because at that point she would have lost. And I will tell you that there's no other avenue she's going to take. She's letting the circuit court decide and that's it. Her husband passed away during all of this and she wanted to be done with it. I'm simply asking that during this period of time that she's exercising her appellate rights, that she not be fined for that period of time, that the fines not have accrued and that they not continue to accrue while Judge Parker is considering what his ruling is going to be. And at this point, all of the documents are into the judge, and we're just awaiting a ruling from him at this point. You know, my thought process is that if we're taking the rule of law seriously, it seems unfair to punish a person because they've exercised something that's allowed under the law. So I'm not asking to waive the fines forever. I'm not asking to have a punishment not be here. I'm not asking for the board to revisit its ruling from back in February when I was before the board. I'm simply asking to not have to have her pay fines for this period of time that she's seeking an appellate remedy. If they rule against her, the fines would turn right back on. So that's all I'm asking for.
Okay, thank you, sir, for comments. I would be okay with that, but I need to hear from the rest of the board. What he's asking is just during this appellate process that the fines not accrued during this process. He's not asking to forgive any past fines, just to waive them for right now. Right? Am I right?
Well, I am asking for the fines that have accrued from May 17th to today, I guess they would be waived, and that's where the non-pro-tunk comes in, because I'm asking for the board. See, the rules of appellate procedure, right now this board, as I speak to you, I'm speaking to you in your quasi-judicial capacity. You're ordinarily a legislative body, but I'm speaking to you as a quasi-judicial body underneath the rules of appellate procedure. You're the judge, essentially, the lower court, essentially. And so you have the power to go back and say, okay, so the fine started on May 17th, but because Mrs. Dowling is exercising her appellate rights, we're not going to have the fine apply until the appeal is over with, which could be tomorrow, or it could be 2 months from now, or it could be 2 years from now. That's really up to Judge Parker, quite frankly. So I'm simply asking that essentially you move the bar on when the fines will start to the point after which Judge Parker rules, and again, it would only be if he rules against Mrs. Alley. And we did lose below, so we're obviously, you know, in the loser's seat here. I'm just asking for her not to have to pay fines for this period of time during which she's appealing. To be crystal clear about what I'm asking for, I'm asking for a stay of the fines, non-pro-tunk, to May 17th, 2020, which would have the effect of no fines have been accrued, and the fines would start upon Judge Parker's ruling if he rules against Mrs. Dowling.
Okay, I'm going to confirm with our attorney.
Okay. You've already ruled, but you can go back with regard to his request, if you so desire, and go back and say that the fines weren't true from May 17, 2020 until Judge Parker rules. But she does have fines that were before that. So if I'm understanding what Mr. Rogers is saying, is that he's just saying non-pro-tunk back to May 17, 2020. I don't particularly have an objection to that.
That's just for this appellate process.
Only from May 17th,
right.
Because we don't know, I don't know whether Mr. Rogers is going to file a response to my response to his petition for writ of certiorari, because that's 20 days from the time that I filed mine. I don't know what he's going to...
I'm not Mr. Bishop. I'm going to allow the petition to stand as
it. Okay. All right. What I'm telling the board is, I don't have a problem with y'all staying and not finding Ms. Dowling from May 17th until Judge Parker rules. And if Judge Parker rules in favor of the Dowling, it's all gone anyway. And then if he rules in the county's favor, then it starts up then. So she would have fines from the time that she committed the offense, if they find that she committed the offense, till May 17th. And then from May 17th, up until the time Judge Parker rules, there would be no fines. I don't have a problem with that.
I'll
agree with me.
I'll make a motion.
I'll make one.
Second.
But the department make a motion to reconsider our previous
right
motion.
I'll make a motion to reconsider.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Now we have a new motion.
I'll make a motion.
Second.
Okay, so and that is to
stay the fines.
The fines.
From May
17th.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you all very much. I appreciate your opportunity to let me come back in. I know it already passed. I appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You all have a good and safe rest of your week.
Thank you. You too. Okay, so now moving to item 21. It was tabled to the first meeting in mid-December. And we're going on to item 22. We want to consider requests to appoint one member to the Taylor River and Sewer District Board as agenda by Lynette Sittner, PWNSD office manager. Currently, the water board has two vacancies, and right now they have one applicant, Lori Rogers, and from that area. And if she's the only one, so if we approve her, she would replace the vacated seat of Roger Westis. Is there a motion to appoint Lori Lundy?
I move.
Second.
Now, a motion by Commissioner Dent, second by Commissioner Murphy. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. General business number 23. The board to discuss solid waste assessment for recreational vehicles, RV, and hunting camps. Commissioner Mooney, would you like to start?
In our last meeting, that was brought up, and it was brought up last year, and it was brought up before that. I haven't changed my feelings on it. A kitchen's a kitchen. If it's in a tent or in a five-bedroom house with three bathrooms, that kitchen buys the same amount of groceries and puts out just as much garbage as anybody else. So, if they're living in a camper, they got one kitchen, and they're going to eat the same amount of food that family is in that camper as they're going to eat in a mansion on the hill. So I'm going to stick with my feeling. We need to have it where it's all equal.
So you would be proposing that they all pay $140 annually?
Exactly.
Okay.
And that amount would almost pay for what we go in the hole each year on the junk pile.
Okay. Any comments from the rest of the board?
Let's see now. There's 2,100, and I got that number. There's 2,100 RV and hunting camps. I thought to do a little math in my head here.
I would say the last time we discussed that if we raised, if the board raises the assessment to 140, that it would be an additional revenue of about $200,000, if I'm not mistaken. I'm trying to remember, but that's the number that comes to mind.
200,000.
Somewhere around there.
And solid waste, about that total, wouldn't it be?
It would take care of what we're going in the hole and give us a little bit probably to maintain what we've got.
Right. Now, I won't be here after another month, so I think we have two three divisions to come back. Sean, you and I are going to take a hiatus from here and look at the run days. If y'all can take the heat, I'll vote for it.
Well, I think that Commissioner Moody is right. we've talked about this, and I know that there are a number of people that are living in sheds, and there are people that are living in campers, and I think that he's right that they probably generate the same amount of garbage. The only thing that I hate with this is just like, you know, well, my friend Ollie Rowell, who, and others like him, that own these camping spots, and, you know, there's nobody there a lot of the times. But the problem is, we really don't have a way to get out and verify and differentiate. I know we've talked to Mark's office, and there's just no good way to do that. So I hate it for people like that. I do have heartburn over that. But they, you know, the way it's been before, if you got a pile of coal there, and I guess if it comes down to it, either rent your spaces or take the pile of coal up. I don't
have a power turned off.
Have your power turned off? And but I agree. I think that the number of people that are living permanently in sheds and campers, that they should be paying their equal share.
Now, on these RVs now, you say
$40. $46.67,
I believe. $46.67.
Or something like that.
And so if you up that to $140, that's less than $100 increase per
year.
Per year. Oh, that's a tough one.
May I ask a question?
Sure.
Yeah.
Is the board interested in having a study done?
It's only about
$100,
is that what it is?
No, it would be at least $20,000. Okay. So I just want to make sure that we're all on the same page.
If we can't, what I understand, the contract is there about that, without doing a study, we jeopardize the whole situation, right?
Yes, sir.
So we need to do a study, and the money we would get from it would cover the study fee, and it was, you know, the study won't be but a one-time thing. The study might show that we don't need to charge that. You know, that's why you get a study done.
Yeah.
But
I think we had the study done, and then the board, Michael and the rest of you, we here, you have something to back you up. We'll follow the guidance we got from the
I think Madison had that problem, didn't it, Tom?
Oh my goodness, they did for sure.
Right.
And
well,
maybe let's just do the study and see how it turns out that protects us, and it's a fair, hopefully it'll be a fair assessment and a fair way to make our decision.
Well, if I may, the study would take several months, and I reached out to GSG, who did the fire assessment study, and they gave me a price of around $20,000. Now, that's not a hard number, but that's it would be somewhere in that neighborhood. They could not start until after January, and they said it would take several months. So if I'm not mistaken, if the board wishes to move forward, then the next step would be to adopt a resolution of intent, and that has to be done before January 1st. But could we not do all of it concurrently and have the study complete maybe in April?
Well, if there's specific time.
Yes.
We've already done one resolution, you know, so we could do another resolution. But also, my suggestion would be to get with the neighbors firm and asking what they would charge for the study also. Yeah. Not just GS, it's
I just wanted a bigger than a bread box type estimation.
And you could talk with the county coordinator and Dixie and see what they were charged.
I did.
How much were they charged? 30?
They did their fire assessment and their solid waste assessment at the same time.
At the same time?
So I didn't know which was for what. And they used GSG, I believe.
Did they really?
Yes.
Okay.
So if you look at the critical event schedule that we use for the fire assessment, it looks like
January 1 would be the deadline after 4 weeks of advertising for a resolution of intent. And then around March or April is when we would start the, we would have to have the ordinance adopted. May or June would be the preliminary assessment resolution. And then a preliminary assessment roll would be prepared. And really, so March, my point is, March would start the process and we go all the way to through the end of the year.
Well, we need to start the process before January the 1st because we need to pass a resolution and intent prior to that to correct. My suggestion would be is to pull out the resolution we did.
I have it right here.
Right there. And then let's don't reinvent the wheel. Let's do our resolution and have it advertised, and let's get it done prior to. And you know, there's no such thing as plagiarism.
This is your resolution.
I know.
This is exactly.
But there's no reason for what I'm saying. There's no reason to say, okay, Conrad, redo another resolution, just copy that sucker right there, and advertise it. And if you need any help with it, of course, let me know, but I mean, it's already done.
You just need to change the date.
Just change the date, Joanna.
If that's what the board wishes.
But I've got one thing,
I've got one. And then tickle her all the dates.
I'm going to throw a bunch of wrench in this. Oh. Commissioner Page made a point that he's going to be leaving, and we have Commissioner Murphy that's going to be leaving. And this is a huge, to me, this is a huge step. We got two more new commissioners coming in, and I feel a little, funny is not the right word, but I don't, just that we right here at the almost the 11th hour, that we're going to make a big step, I guess, with two new commissioners coming right in that would have no say-so. I'm almost thinking that we really ought to let the two new commissioners, but they don't have to live with this for 4 years.
I don't know that we have time unless you want to have a special meeting in December, which of course you could, because you have to advertise for 4 weeks and have a public hearing.
Madam Chair, could we authorize the resolution being done at this point in time? That would be, I mean, that's got to be done by January the 1st. The resolution is 10, talking about. If we did that part of it, and then the new board could decide if they wanted to study or forget about it. So, I mean,
you can always, if you recall when we went down to Dixie County,
right.
You can always back off of it.
Yeah.
You see, you passed a resolution, it's a resolution of intent.
Right.
Okay, so the new commissioners, they say, well, we don't want to do that. And then you get a vote, and then it's, you could kill it, for lack of a better term.
Well, and I follow what you're saying, but then I'm thinking, if I'm a brand new commissioner coming in November, and three people that are still sitting here did pass a resolution, and I'm one of two new people, I would be thinking, well, this is obviously the majority of, they wanted this. And, it might just make it very, what's the word?
We can get it down enough. We can go ahead and get it started, no matter what happens. And after November, if they, we got to get the study done. The study might not even feel we need to do it. So, I mean, it's not, there's a lot of variables out there, but we need to get our part started and don't pay any attention to this in the deadline again.
That's right.
We done missed it one time.
The transitioning into a county commission seat is not an easy process. It wasn't easy for me. I had to deal with what was before me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in this seat right now, and I understand what you're saying with the process. It needs to go forward.
Okay, I'm fine with that. That's what this board wants to do. I'm perfectly fine with that. So we want to do a resolution then. We need a motion.
Motion to do the resolution.
I'll say.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Now, what's the time frame that you need to talk about doing this? After fresh year, you said?
I would say, if I can firm up the numbers and the calendar, I can bring it to the board at the next meeting, and then we can go ahead and get on the calendar. I can check with Neighbors Giblin and Nickerson, and we can get some firm prices. And then if I can bring that back to the board at the next meeting, at least we could have that scheduled. I know some of these consultants are very busy right now with CARES Act activities, and at least we can get on the schedule so that as soon as they can start.
That'd be great.
Then
we have the resolution on pass the resolution at the next meeting. Have a resolution ready from intent.
It has to be advertised for 4 weeks, and we have to have a public hearing, right?
Right.
Okay.
About 4 weeks,
don't we? Yeah. Okay. Well, then we need to go ahead and pass the resolution, and if it's got to be advertised, the resolution has to be. Oh, it's an advertisement to pass the resolution.
Yes, sir.
Okay,
yes,
I got you. Okay.
Yes. So we should.
I just want to make sure we got the resolution ready.
Right. I can send this to you this week.
Okay.
So you can look it over and then send it to the clerk's office to advertise. And then schedule it for 4 weeks after this meeting, which would be probably the first meeting in November if we have enough time. If not, it would be the second meeting in November.
Did we do a notice too?
Yes, I have that.
So we got a notice and a...
Yes, we
do. Okay, sorry.
Okay, moving on. Item 24, the board to discuss additional dockage for crabbers to load and unload trap so there is no interference with recreational fishermen. Who wants to speak to this?
That was Commissioner Moody.
I got to put on there. What it is, you've got commercial crabbers down there that need a place to unload their crap and load them, but they cannot use our boat ramp down there. We let them use the boat ramp back when we had the boat ramp closed to keep their businesses going. Mm-hmm. That's the only time they ever actually used our boat ramp. They are two blocks down there with no place now to put their traps on them, get them out, or put them in the water. And we own two blocks on the canal down there. And they need, that lot's just sitting there, and they need a place to unload. They're fine with signing the whole harmless, doing whatever, they leasing the lot or whatever. But you've got people down there trying to make a living and hire people and pay wages that need a place to unload their boat, and unload their boat.
You're talking about
at Keith B.
Where are the two lots you own?
You know where the cement bridge is on the back canal by there? When you come across the bridge heading south, there's a lot on either side there that the county owns. And, they're just open grass lots. But the one on the west side is the one that on the canal, they can't go under the bridge. They're not high enough to go under to get in the back and get in the back canal, but they can come out the main canal. And that's what we need, a place to load and unload.
So we need to have a public hearing on this because the people that live,
I think you should be honest with
you. Yeah, the people that live right there and they're introducing something.
Yeah.
Well, they've been unloading it at a person's house, and they're right amongst everybody.
I just think, to be fair, we probably should have a public hearing.
Well, the way the crabbers feel, they pay taxes, and it's a county lot, and their taxpayers compared to the county. That lot, pretty much, they're part owners of that lot, but they're citizens of the state of county, and they pay taxes.
Yeah,
so they feel like they got just as much right as neighbors do to that lot.
Right, and I'm not against the crabbers, but the people that live there also fit the same description. They pay the taxes just like the crabbers do. So, I mean, you know, everybody owns a little bit of it, whether you're a crabber or a homeowner. I'm not against the crabbers doing it at all. I just think that it would just be a good thing to have a public hearing and hear from the people right around there that, that, you know, everybody thinks their property is very valuable. They don't want to do anything that may make them think that it's devalued.
There's a time frame there, though. Season started today, I'm pretty sure, didn't it?
No, I think we got another week, I think it is.
Maybe another week, yeah, this Monday, next Monday,
It's a catch-22, okay? You know, you have public land, and people want access to public land, okay? But the crabbers are already utilizing boat ramps, okay? They're not putting the material on the ground at the boat ramp and then loading their boats. They're coming with their boats already loaded, and they're launching. What this gentleman is asking for is that he can use the land to put his traps, his rollers, and everything else out there.
He won't load them on his trailer.
Okay, so now what I would like to express is there's 67 counties in the state of Florida. How many crabbing licenses do you have throughout the state of Florida versus how many live here? You know, so yeah, we want to try to help the commercial activity, but this would open up, like you say, Jim, a can of worms in a sense. You need to have a public hearing to find out what the public has to say about this. Because if you start putting crab traps and props and all kinds of material sitting out there, you're introducing commercial activity into a residential neighborhood. So it needs to go to a public hearing. That's going to be very delicate.
I'm on the left bank to get it from through to the state public meetings. Many weeks will that take?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can advertise for the public hearing for next, when you have to get your next meeting, right? In October.
We're going to advertise.
So that's be at your October 20th. Meeting.
Did we win?
October 20th meeting.
We don't have a meeting planned October 20th, or do we?
We do.
Yes. Okay, well then it
was a meeting.
9 o'clock.
Okay. 9
o'clock.
Yes, sir.
So we have another time to advertise and have the public hearing at that time?
Yes.
Somebody want to make a motion to that effect?
I'll make a motion to that effect.
Is there a second?
We'll make a second.
Okay, we have a motion by Commissioner Moody, a second by Commissioner Murphy. Any further discussion?
I have also one thing, Jim. You're going to have multitude of crabbers with licensing, jockeying and vying for a small part of land. We need to keep that in mind as well. You know, as much as we want to help these people, you're going to condense how many commercial licenses in one little area, you know, so.
Well,
that's what's out of
the lot.
They scatter out from the Alta River, the Cassini, and the Finn Holloway, and Sting Hackey. I mean, they're kind of where their crap is going out of, you know, their area that they're crabbing in.
Yeah, and you got people from South Florida, all over, according to when the calendar sets, it's different zones. So they migrate. It's a migrating process.
Most of them go to Sting Hackey anyway, the ones that come from out of town. Just because the access to deep water,
right,
any tide in the wintertime and everything makes a lot of difference. Well, and peak the crabbers in the wintertime are having a hard time getting in and out now because of the canal not being dredged. But right, that, we're going to try to eliminate that as soon as possible.
Exactly.
You know, but.
Okay, well, we got a motion and a second on the floor to hold a public hearing at our next board meeting later this month. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed say aye. Sign. Motion carries. Okay, moving on to 24A. The board to consider setting a hearing pursuant to Chapter 10, Article 2, Section 1068, modification, suspension, or revocation of the Taylor County Code of Ordinances for the permit issued to the Iron Horse Mud Ranch because adjacent landowner has sent a notice that they are considering withdrawing waiver the special event permit for 10-15-20 to 10-19-20 Mud Dog. Mr. Bishop?
Well, we got a, I didn't get it, but Luana got a notice from an attorney represents some folks that had agreed for, you know, for the mud bog between the 15th and the 20th of this year, October. And so, and they cited 1063, you know, that,
yes.
Do you have that letter that's the paragraph that that Mr. Krasomsky
yes.
You passed over here. Let me give it to you. Thank you. And they said that they had a problem with what Einhorst was doing. On ingress and egress on their property. They cited 1063.3, which says the owner, the exact location, legal description, area, and shape of all lands to be used for parking or other uses incidental to the event. All portions of the activity, including parking, shall be located a minimum of 660 feet from the nearest property line unless a waiver signed by the adjoining property owner is submitted with application for the license. And these people had signed a waiver, okay, mm-hmm. the landowner. And but they said that they have multiple issues with the Iron Horse. First, there have been multiple occasions in which the gate to the easement had been locked, preventing them from ingress and egress from their property. On one occasion, the lock on the gate had to be cut in order for them to leave their property. And of course, the gate is constructed outside the scope of distance allowed by the easement and encroaches on the folks' property. And this disruption of their ability to enter or leave the property is unacceptable. This is what they're saying. And they propose that the gate at the entrance of the easement be relocated to the entrance of Iron Horse property to prevent any further issues. Alternatively, we are open to any suggestions from Iron Horse with regard to, so they must have been having a problem with Iron Horse, you know, negotiating. And then they say that there's been multiple mud bogs this past year, and it's typical for the patrons to the mud bog to arrive days ahead of time before it begins, and they camp along the easement in anticipation of the mud bog event. There have been multiple instances where the camping patrons have created noise disturbance, left litter on their property, and defecated on their property. We propose that the patrons to the mud bog be prohibited by Einhorst from camping along the easement. And they said that they've reached out to Einhorst and their attorney on multiple occasions, but they've not been able to resolve the issue. So once again, then if you look at 1068, I got out the ordinance. After a hearing, the Board of County Commissioners may revoke, suspend, or modify a license for events for any just reason, including but not limited to any noncompliance with any ordinance, state law, or county or state rule. So what you can do pursuant to our ordinance is set a hearing for the people that are complaining and for the Iron Horse people to come in and state their case, because you're between the devil and the deep blue sea. Mm-hmm. What I mean by that is if you suspend their permit, then they're going to maybe sue you.
Possibly.
Mm-hmm. But if you let them keep the permit, and these people are saying, you know, we're within the property, they could sue you. So, but thank goodness we put this in here that there's a procedure for a hearing, so they'll get due process either way. Mm-hmm. Because you have the right to revoke or suspend if you find that the landowner's complaint is in fact valid. So the question that we raised was, do y'all want to set a hearing? And it has to be, it has to be a special meeting because the 15th is coming up rather swiftly. Y'all understand what I'm talking about?
We need to do that. Go ahead and get it on the schedule where we can get it done before the mud ball time.
I agree with
you. There's a lot of people planned way ahead. And I'd like to say one thing. There's about $4 million worth of revenue comes in each year from Turner or from around Kentucky County. And that's a lot of revenue to run off. Kentucky County needs all they can get, especially in these hard times. You know, they do a lot of business in Kentucky County.
I will tell you this, that this letter was dated October the 2nd. So we tried to bring it to your attention within 3 days. You know.
That's the hell of it, isn't it?
Well, I wish we'd have gotten it, you know, have a little bit of time, but y'all can conduct the hearing and decide what you want to do.
How will we do that? I mean, have them all in here and what kind of like what?
We would notice them saying that pursuant to, and listen to me closely, Luana, pursuant to our ordinance, section 1068, we are going to have a hearing where you can present your side with regard to the permit for the mud bog of Iron Horse between October 15th and 20th, 2020. And so it's a hearing to determine whether you're going to, in fact, revoke or suspend the permit, or you're going to let it go forward. And you're giving each party due process where they can come before you. In other words, don't make a decision on what you're going to do before you do it. Listen to both sides, and I know you will.
Okay, now, let me just say that today is Monday. The 5th, and the 15th is Thursday week, week from this Thursday, when the mud bogs start, and they'll have people coming in, according to that, beforehand, so how quick can we schedule a meeting?
What are the notice requirements for...
There's no requirement on this. Okay.
So you could have it tomorrow or the next day.
Tomorrow, the next day, or Thursday, or whatever.
Why don't we try to contact them and get that for tomorrow?
I'm not available tomorrow, but y'all could do it without me. I'm available Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I'm just not available.
I'm available Wednesday, but I'm available Thursday.
Or tomorrow. My suggestion would be, I think you probably need me here at that. So what we do generally speaking, when I'm the kicker on these things, is want to call my office,
okay,
and then let y'all know when I can do it, and then we just set the hearing. And you know, this is important for both sides, so they need to come. You know, if they don't come, that's their problem. You know, they need to come, and you would need to notice, Mr.
Sir.
I believe we have someone. Do we have someone on the line who wishes to speak?
Yes.
Do you want to take public comment or
yes, I will. What is the number?
1323.
1323? Caller 1323. You may speak now for 3 minutes.
Yes, this is Todd Larson with my branch.
Yes, good evening.
Good evening, friends, for the commissioners to take the moment to listen to me again. Most of every instance that is retained to has already been resolved. We don't allow anyone to park on the road for camping or anything like that. That would atone to her property. That used to be an issue years ago before we took ownership of it. Since then, we have, instead of parking them on the road, we actually send them in the gate and get them in. Now, also, we also put security out at one security guard at one of the entrances to make sure that is open all the time. Another one of their entrances goes directly to Highway 19, so it is unfettered access also. There's no issue except that Henry used to work for us, now he doesn't, and basically he's got an axe to grind. We are trying to put on an event here and make that happen, and as you all know, I mean, there again, there's lots of money that is dropped into putting on the event, which we have already spent. We've already gotten the permits, and they signed the waivers. We did our due diligence. If personally, if they have an issue with me, this is something that maybe a lawyer should take care of, but we have hotels in this town that are crammed full, already booked for the weekend. We have camper rents that are already booked full for the entire weekend. If they decide to pull this permit, there's a lot of repercussions that come from this, not just across the board. And there are not issues on the trash that was brought up. You can talk to the sheriff's department, my guy, pick up all of the trash. We found Henry Lee's registration to his H1 home out there. So we're picking up garbage that's not even ours, but we want to make the, I hope that the board looks at what we have done for this county as a positive. We've lowered the hospital rate going in. We don't have air care coming in and out of here anymore. We've made it a family-friendly event, and we're trying to make it a shining star for Taylor County versus a black eye going, kind of hanging your head down and going, yeah, I want to love on. We're making something that's at least respectful with an eye on it. And Henry Lee, when he worked for us at Iron Horse Branch, he was a big advocate for the park until he didn't work here no more.
Okay, Mr. Larson,
yeah.
your time is up, but okay. you stated in the beginning that y'all have fixed the situation and everything, and if that's true, then it would be very good if you and Mr. Lee could get together and settle this, and then we wouldn't even have a hearing. We're going to schedule the hearing, but if you two can come to some sort of agreement and notify us, then we will be very happy to cancel the hearing. So, and thank you for calling in.
He won't answer the phone.
But I'm just telling you what if you fix it, if that could happen, we would not have the public hearing. Otherwise, we will have the public hearing when we set the date. But hopefully, y'all can resolve this.
When and you guys will notify me of this?
Yes, sir. Our county administrator is going to communicate with our county attorney tomorrow to fit his schedule ASAP, and they will notify you and Mr. Lee of the time of the meeting. And our attorney did say that we'll set this hearing, and it will be up to you all to be here.
I understand that. I just would need to expedite that quickly because we are going to have a lot of very upset people.
We understand. We've been listening. If we want to have it, we even mentioned tomorrow. That's not going to happen, but it will be ASAP, and you will be notified sometime tomorrow, and Mr. Lee will be notified tomorrow. Okay?
Okay.
All right. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Is there another caller?
Now, I got an email saying that the attorney was on standby and that he raised his hand. Do you have anyone else?
No, ma'am.
I thought Ray was going to call in.
Ian.
It's Ian.
if he calls in, we'll take his call.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Our horse is between the hard place and the rock. And that's being put up in between. What ought to be a civil thing about it? This is what I think you're wrong. I think it's just about time to pull a permit that you've given somebody. Maybe he's probably spent a lot of money advertising, getting the hotel from. I just don't think it's fair. I don't know.
If you look at the issuance date of the permit is January 21st, and the complaint lodged is October 7th.
Is that 10 months?
So if it was a big deal, would you not file it the same day, next week, or within a timely fashion? But we'll figure all that out in 10 years. That's what I'm looking at, is what took so long.
Right. For one thing, I want to suggest that when we are done with this, that we go back and revisit this permitting, and that we put a clause in there, Mr. Bishop, and y'all can figure out how to say it, but something that says that it can be changed within 30 days from the time that the permit is granted. That way, if there's, you know, it doesn't go until the 11th hour, and it protects everybody.
One of the things that I think we need to change on that, and I've noticed this before, and is that if, you know, they kind of signed a blanket waiver,
yeah,
you might want them to sign a waiver each time. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying?
The only thing would be wrong with that, though, the man invested the kind of money that those group had down there, and then one of the neighbors decided not to sign it just because they had an issue with them. It'd be a terrible thing to man invested all that money into the county, and then they get just one neighbor can not sign it, so it's just too loud for me, I can't stand it anymore. You know, I mean, it'd be bad for me.
Would it be a civil matter after that, though?
Well, with our ordinance, you know, we don't, like I said, once again, these people have put the Board of County Commissioners in the middle. And the passage of this ordinance, you know, the board that was preceding y'all that did this ordinance worked extremely hard on this ordinance. And there's a lot of people that came in and fought, that was in for it, and we were, and this is the first time we've had a problem. And how long is this, when was this ordinance passed? 2012?
I think it
was before that. Maybe 2007? Time passes, you know, when you're having fun. Time passes fast. How long was it? Let's see.
But while you have the matter, if I was in these shoes and I had an adjacent landowner that would not agree, Commissioner Moody, I could go ahead and put in a little more wine in there instead of losing all that business.
He said that he tried to buy another road in there, but there's a swamp on both sides. There's no way to build another road in there. He done been through, he said he went through Corps of Engineers and DEP and Corner Water Management, they wouldn't let him build a road through that swamp.
2004, for 18 years, we haven't had a problem.
Madam Chairperson?
Yeah.
There is another caller.
Okay, what's the number?
6913.
Caller 6913, you may speak now for 3 minutes.
Hi, good evening. This is Attorney Heath with Scott Governor Lee. I appreciate your patience. I was had some technical difficulties, but I'm not going to read all the articles Mr. Bishop outlined in the letter I sent to Smith Timmerton. But our position is we would like to request a hearing on this matter, and understand Mr. Larson's position with this vote coming up. We do not believe it's emergency in nature, so we have no objection to set this out with the upcoming budget, understanding that there are vendors, customers, hotels being rented for the budget. I would point out to the board that this has been ongoing since January. There's been 4 attempts to reach out to both the council for Mr. Larson to resolve this issue. That's Mr. Trey Howard. Mr. Trey Howard took Ms. Larson and indicated that I reached out to Mr. Larson directly. and I did so back in July of this year. And on July 17th, we seemingly reached an agreement with regards to the easement, and I have since reduced that down to writing for Mr. Larson, our representative for our Iron Horse 2 to ASU, and we have not heard back from them. So just to summarize, this is a last resort on behalf of Lee to bring this to the Board of County Commissioners. Our request today is to set this before a hearing for public comment on these matters. I would ask if the board to set this, after the next mud bog, so Mr. Larson does not have to worry about the downside of dealing with a hearing on such a short basis. But we have reached out to the council for 9 months now with no relief for the issues that we have. They are an elderly couple, and they've had issues getting out of this property, mud bog is in our hurry. So I'll ask for the set this for subsequent hearing. My position that does not need to be emergency in nature or expedited. And I'm open to answer any questions that the board might have.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions from anybody?
Okay. I think we said just put it on afterwards.
And quite so after this note was, and didn't have a public hearing.
Yeah, I think that's a great suggestion that y'all have offered. And so that's good. We will not then have a hearing before this event that begins on October the 15th, right?
Right.
Yes, that's our position.
Okay, so good. That's good. Okay? Yes, Mr. Bishop.
I just want to thank Ian that, as an attorney, that's a good solution. Thank you, Ian. And I would also ask Ms. LaWanda to call Mr. Larson and say that we're not going to have a hearing and that their permit is good for this mud bog.
This is the last one we've given a permit for this year, right?
No, we got one in there.
You want to dish over? I won't be.
Well, at least for this one coming up in a few short days. Mr. Larson does not have to worry about it. However, if the parties cannot come to some sort of agreement or solution, then there would have to be some sort of hearing before the next event beyond October the 15th.
15
or 19. Okay, well, we're very much in agreement with that, sir. Is he still there?
Yes.
Yes, I'm here. Sorry.
So you heard everything I said?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, well, we'll go from there then.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay,
so, Mr. Long. Item 25, County Attorney, item number 25, the County Attorney to discuss revised ordinance number 2017-07, small county surtax and notice amending ordinance. Is there a motion to read this revised? No?
No, this hasn't been advertised.
No.
This is for
discussion.
This is for y'all to tell, I prepared it at y'all's request, and this is for y'all to tell us to advertise it. If you'll notice, the only change is if you look at section 4, use of funds, it says 1, funding or partial funding of capital improvements, including but not limited to canals and also emergency medical services, operational expenses of the county. That's the change. And so, if y'all are in agreement to go ahead and advertise it, we can have a hearing on it and determine whether you want to pass this ordinance, this amendment to the ordinance.
Okay, but I had highlighted that part that you just read, included but not limited to canals and also emergency medical services operational expenses. Now, LaWanda, with canals, don't we have the money coming in? Do we have the money already for the dredging of the canals.
I believe it's already budgeted.
Yeah, so then.
We can eliminate that.
I'm not in favor of this word on this, that is included but not limited to canal. We've got the canals covered, so why would we want to take this tax money? I'm sorry.
I've just done this about 6 times, that's all.
I'm all for taking the canals out because we've got funding that we didn't have to get down when we originally passed that. Put the canal part in there.
So the funding. Or partial funding for emergency medical service operational expenses?
Yeah, I thought that the whole time that we were doing this to cover, I brought it up. So my intention was to find a way to fund emergency medical services. And this to me was the sole purpose of doing this was for that.
I think the canal part was already in there before.
Right.
Oh, yeah, it was.
But let's take it out then.
It was in the original. You know, we went back and forth on that too for a long time to get the ordinance number 2017-07.
We did, but if you recall, I don't think we were quite sure that we would have funding, and we were trying to figure out, and if we didn't have funding, it would be okay. But now that we have funding for canals.
And that's when we're still acting there, right?
Yeah, right.
What was the charge called when the people went on the lots along the canal last time when they dredged it out? Didn't they have to pay each canal owner? But,
yeah.
You know, people that lived on the canal had to pay a certain amount.
Look, and then before I came here, and then the board rescinded that. So it's no longer in effect.
Right.
What they would say would be the funding for emergency medical service operational expenses.
Yes.
No, I think you still want capital improvements in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yes.
Capital improvements or emergency and or emergency medical services. Right?
Yeah, it was the intention in the beginning was for capital improvements.
Yeah, I'll take that out. I think it was a canal.
Right. That, in other words, that would be for like us, our third party provider for our ambulance service. Would that money go for that? If we had that license back?
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
Funding for capital improvements and also emergency medical services operational expenses.
Yeah, keep wearing it's operational.
Of the county. Let me read it to you, okay? Because I'm going to, if y'all agree that that's the wording, then we do this, but we're going to advertise it, if y'all agree to advertise it tonight, so we can get it done.
Okay, read it to us and we'll vote on it.
Okay. Funding for capital improvements and also emergency medical services operation expenses of the county.
Yes. Yes.
So
that would be the ambulance. It didn't be emergency management, isn't it?
But that is the ambulance service.
Emergency medical
services. AMS.
Now, all this arose from a vote that we took a month or so ago. And we tried to make the hospital whole. For $20,000 a month, remember Jim?
Right.
So that's $20,000.
No, that $20,000 is coming out of contingency.
That's coming out of contingency.
Yeah. Until the end of the year.
Until we get a
third party provider.
Third party. Then that $20,000 goes away.
Yeah.
So this, we can use this money if we have to subsidize what we're already given DMH for analysis. And add more money to the pocket to get it to the right vendor in here.
Yes.
That's right.
And nobody else can tap into this now. We have Conrad read it. For operational expenses except for emergency medical.
Right.
Works for me.
Okay, someone want to make a motion?
I'll make a motion.
To advertise.
To advertise. Say again?
To advertise.
Yes. We got a motion and a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries. County Administrator items number 26. The board to consider approval of the CARES Act Phase 1 expenditure request as agenda by the County Administrator.
Madam Chairperson, I'm sorry. Do we have enough? No, we don't have enough.
Please hold up.
Thank you. This is a list of items that the CARES Act Funding Committee has approved on their level, and now we are asking the board to approve these expenditures. Just so, just so we all understand, this is for phase one funding. So this is from the original $940,906. We have another allocation of $727,000 and some change for our phase two funding that will be advanced to us, that we cannot receive those funds until we expend the phase one.
By January 1st.
By December 30th. But we have to spend the phase one before we get to the phase two. So once phase one is completely expended, then we can move to phase two. So what I would like to do is every board meeting, if we have expenditures to bring to the board, is to try to get this money spent down as quickly as we can so that we can move to phase two. And we're also working on the spending plan for phase two all at the same time because we have such a short time to expend this money. We have less than 2 months at this point.
Okay, can I ask you then, from now on, that you could send this to us ahead of time so we could look at it?
Sure. You mean ahead of
the expenditures?
Ahead of the board meeting?
Ahead of the board meeting. Sure. Because I'm assuming you're going to call it out right now.
Do you want me to go line by line, or do you
have
any questions?
It's in the packet.
Oh, it's in the packet?
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, I read the packet, but I didn't see that.
I missed that.
It's item 26.
There you go.
My apologies, Tim.
But I'll be happy to go through it and see if you would like.
Yeah, let's do that.
Yeah.
Okay. I think you want this done. Have you got another copy of my chance?
That's number 27.
Do you have another copy?
You can go print it.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
I don't get copies. I've been all night on tomorrow.
Okay.
And I went through every item, but I'm sure sometimes you can get it.
Okay. Do you want to wait for your copy?
Yes, if it's okay with the board.
Yes.
If while she's doing that, if it's okay, let's go on to item number 28. We've already done 27, but 28 is the county administrator to discuss informational items. Did you want to do that?
I don't have anything for the board this evening. Anything additional?
Comments and concerns from the public for non-agenda items. If anyone has something they would like to comment on that was non-agenda, you may call in and speak for 3 minutes.
Number 1865.
Caller number 1865. You may speak now for 3 minutes. Caller 1865. They're still on there?
Mm-hmm. Okay, moving on.
Anybody else?
4834.
Caller number 4834.
No, ma'am. I'm good. This is Christy. I'm just here if you have any questions on the CARES Act.
Okay, well, we're kind of moved on, but when we get back to that, we'll know you're there. What is your number, Christy?
4834.
Okay. Thank you. So, caller 1865. Okay, anyone else?
5759.
No, I don't have a question.
What is your number, sir? What is your number, sir?
I'm not sure.
Well, just go ahead, state your name and address and your comment, sir.
Earl, no, I don't have a comment right now.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, okay. He's on the CARES Act committee.
Yeah.
5759.
Caller 5759. You may speak, state your name and address, and you can speak for 3 minutes. Caller 5759.
Is
the
hands up?
No.
Oh, okay. So this might be committee members who are just listening to the call.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And they don't have their hands raised, so they're just listening.
Okay. So let's go back to item 26 and the board to consider approval of the CARES Act Phase 1 expenditure request. Go ahead.
The first item would be the 25% match for COVID expenditures that we have submitted to FEMA. That's $10,414. The next, and you just want to interrupt me if you have questions?
Yeah. Okay.
The next item is audiovisual upgrades to the boardroom, which would include new cameras, speakers, soundboard, and microphones to facilitate public participation and engagement. That's $15,000. The next item is Department of Health temporary staffing to replace staff lost by statewide reduction of funding. This would be allow additional staffing through the end of December, and that's $34,000. The next item is $9,000 for a tent for the Department of Health for a covered area for testing. The next item is Sheriff's Office dispatch expansion. This would be to allow for social distancing for dispatch operations, and that's $22,000. The next item would be Sheriff's Office laptops. It's a purchase of 20 laptops for deputies that will allow remote work capabilities. That's $56,222. So those are hardtop, rugged type laptops. The next item is Supervisor of Elections Scanner. This is a high-speed scanner to tabulate greater number of mail ballots requested due to COVID-19. That's $27,502. The next item for the courthouse is petitions for Judge Blue's office, $562. PPE requested by Judge Parker, that's $10,120. The property appraiser is requesting $714 for petitions for the office. The tax collector is requesting $2,200 for PPE and a road course, and that's so they can do remote testing for driver's license, and $6,885 for petitions. $15,000 for county fire, which would be for patient care monitors and inspection units. The next item is $15,000 for, this would be for public buildings PPE, which would include hand sanitizer station, mask, and sanitizer. And this would be just a large supply, obviously, that we would store. And that's $15,000. The total is $224,619. All purchases, with the exception of the Department of Health, would be made by County Purchasing Department and would follow the board pre-purchasing policy. The funding for the Department of Health, we would most likely need to enter into some type of MOU with them or interlocal agreement, which is what our consultant is recommending.
Okay, are there any questions from any of the board members? Okay, is there a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Second.
We have a motion by Commissioner Moody, second by Commissioner Murphy. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We've done 27, we were at 28, we didn't have anything, and then comments from the public, do we have any more calls?
No, ma'am.
And then item 30, board informational items.
I have nothing tonight.
It's late, I'll go off to the next year.
Commissioner Dent?
I was calling about the old Quinn Road. Somebody did go and scrape that road with you. You know anything about that?
I thought some private parties did some work on that road, right?
I know the fact about it, but they scraped it or something.
Sheriff Page went down there and took his equipment down there and leveled the whole road out, graded the whole thing. And they have got Anderson Construction Company gonna sell them milling that they're taking off South 19.
Okay.
And they're gonna mill the whole road. And the neighbors, all the neighbors that own property up down both sides are chipping in to pay for the milling. And we did all we could do, and the city's done all they could do. We couldn't do it. We wanted to do it. And that's just, you know, that's one thing that happened. They picked that on the road. And they did ask me to talk to the board about, once they got it checked real nice, could we maintain it? I said, no, we really couldn't, because we don't actually own it, well, they say. There's a sign at the end of the road that says Oak Quinn Road that the county put up there. And when you look it up on the county website, it says the county owns it, but we never accepted it, what they say. So we don't actually own it. It was deeded to the county, but the county commissioners at that time never accepted it, so it don't belong to the county.
60 years ago, I know what it was.
And it don't belong to the city.
Yeah.
Is it in the city limits?
Yes.
It's in the city limits now, but they tell me that the city limits used to be north of it, and sometime in the past they changed it and went down past it. And that's, the old gentleman that lived there on that road told me that, so I said, well, I don't remember them changing the city limits sign. He said that, and Mr. Conrad, you might can remember that, they said Byron Butler got that changed years ago, moved the city limits down there. Lower, below his place there on my thing. But I don't remember that.
That is a long time ago.
That's right. But as far as I can remember, the sign, the city limits, it's been in the city limits as long as I can remember.
Long time.
Right.
Probably 50 years.
But they got the road looking real good, and they solved their own issue.
Well, you know, when I was on the city council from 01 to 05, those citizens were calling me from that road, and I tried my best to get the city to help them out. And the city wouldn't do it at all. And here we are, just many years later, and it's been an issue. I've had people to call me, I know they've called all along over these years since I was on the city council. And back then, the city said, well, we don't own it. The county said, we don't own it. And that's the way it went for a long time. But, and I hate that the citizens have had to do this, but there's...
But it's a private road, and they picked their own road, and
yeah,
they got it good to go. And they had a lot of people donate for milling for the road, and they had people donate equipment down there to work on the road, so
that's good.
They're in good shape.
That's
good. Is that Oak Quinn Road sign on Royal Dixon, the green or blue?
It's green.
You don't own a super dead under that road.
I think private road is blue.
Right, so that's
going to
be a blue sign along.
I said, we don't own under the building on this. Under the building down the airport that the construction company used to have, and we let TCDA have it for a income. Next to the water plant down the airport road, out there near the airport.
Which building? I'm sorry.
That was a group in there called Underdoes. And that was the one that made lingerie.
Oh, I thought, then after that, wasn't that the Quality?
Quality Plus.
Quality Plus.
But it's written as Underdoes. It's just Underdoes. We don't want anything to do.
Yes, sir. Okay. I think we got all that straightened out at the last.
There's another one on the oldies.
Mm.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Well, then I agree. We've got plenty of line walk available now. Since the new year has started.
We should. Huh? I don't know that we picked it up now. We should.
Yes, I have. And how are we doing on getting caught up with all the roads? Because I know a lot of commissioners have had, I think we're trying to get caught up.
I know we had issues with one of our sidearm mowers that was in the shop, but I'll check on that tomorrow.
One of those was in the shop.
Yeah.
But I thought it was supposed to be fixed maybe by this week, but I'll check on that.
Because I had a request to those people about that. And how many more of the mowings do we have left this year with the tool company?
I think they're mowing right now, but let me check and see if they finished that cycle or not.
Okay.
They should have already finished it by, if we did an extra cycle in September, if I'm not mistaken, but I'll check on that.
Okay, and can you give us a list of roads that they do not do?
Sure.
And that way everybody knows and the new commissioners
will have
available to them too.
So you just want a list of roads that we mow?
Yeah.
Basically. Okay.
Yeah. Pretty
yes.
Okay. That's all I had. Just wanted, you know, I knew that we had talked and you said that when the new year came in, we'd have more on rock and then so. Okay. That's all I have. I want to thank everybody, the staff and our attorney and Sheriff's office, and it's a great opportunity to serve, and I enjoy working with my fellow board members. Okay.
You did a good job, Chair.
Well, thank you. I try. This is about 5 hours worth of work here, so. but that's okay.
All right.
Is there a motion to adjourn?
I move.
Motion in a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. You told me to go out there in the morning with that thing said. Just reschedule it.
No, I'm going to go. I ain't coming in front.
You're going to wake up in the morning and be like, I ain't going.
Well, see, I got to be back by 10:30 anyway. So I'm just over.